to attend the PCR trade and industry chair the processing registration.
Okay. Fully. The other members should be here. Okay. What I say, one of our members, can you start? Kosatu, can we start with in your hands? Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Chair. Good morning to members and to colleagues. My name is Matthew Parks. I'm from COSATU's Parliamentary Office. So I'd like to thank the committee for taking interest in such a critical matter as the IRP, as well as to give us a chance to raise the views of our members. COSATU members cover the range of the economy. Not only do we cover energy workers, such as from NUM, but we cover all workers. We view this IRP as very critical, both for members, but also for the economy at large. I think, Chair, look, the issue of energy is a very, very much of a hot potato in South Africa currently, politically, economically, and so on. Our members who work at Eskom are very concerned, not only about their jobs and their pensions, but about their families. We're also equally concerned about the state of energy, tariff hikes upon consumers at large. We feel that the energy, or the electricity tariff hikes, which have been far above inflation for the past 10 years, every year, have really had a decimating impact upon the economy, ordinary consumers, industry, and jobs at large. Chair, we're also equally worried about what we feel is a very threat to the survival of our state, given the size of Eskom's debt levels of 400 billion rand, and of course the repeated pressure on the state to bail out Eskom, and the temptation on the state's part to look at the PIC as a way to bail it out. Of course, Chair, the PIC is not a petty cash for government. It's workers' pension money, it's workers' insurance money. Chair, I think also in terms of context, our members are deeply scarred by the fact that we have one out of three workers unemployed. We have a below 1% jobless economic growth rate, or in fact a recession, and workers across all sectors of the economy are being retrenched in their thousands, in particular in the mining sector. Chair, I think also without stating the obvious, we are scarred by the impact of state capture at Eskom and in the state at large. So we welcome, even though the Department of Energy is still busy with its own public consultation process on the IRP, I think we welcome the Portfolio Committee's extensive public hearings in it. I think it's good that the MPs are being proactive, and I think the fact that the Portfolio Committee set aside about 5 days is quite commendable. Chair, we were quite frustrated with COSATU that government was repeatedly delaying consultation on the IRP and the IEP. Every year when we had a new energy minister, and I think there's been about six in the past half a decade, we were told it will be finalized in the next few weeks and they'll be consulting us. And of course, this frequent change of ministers has also had a destabilizing impact upon the department itself. But I think we are appreciative that the new minister, Komela Khadebe, has come to the neck very quickly, and we're starting the engagement process earnestly there as well. We're hoping that we will find each other. We were quite surprised, Chair, to find that the IRP, the view that they don't need to do this process simultaneously with the IEP. We found that a bit strange. Chair, I think for us, the IRP was quite striking for several reasons. I think for us the major issue is the what we view as huge emissions from IRP. We didn't find bold proposals in it on how to save Eskom. We didn't see a sound economic model to ensure its survival. We are worried that at this rate Eskom may not survive the next 5 years, given that the debt levels, the corruption levels, the plummeting demands, the rising tariffs. Chair, we're also quite alarmed that in the IRP, it itself admits that further research and studies are needed to be done around the 2030 model. It's strange that we have an IRP which says they need to do more research. If they're not ready, then they should have delayed and done their homework properly. It was even alarming, Chair, that they mentioned the previous IRP used old rand-dollar exchange rates, but even in this IRP, the rand-dollar exchange rate is quite out of date already. I think they were quoting about 13 rand to a dollar. We know where we are now past 14 plus to a dollar. Chair, we really thought that the IRP would take us into its confidence to deal with the issue of state capture at Eskom. We know Eskom was really at the heart of state capture and looting. We thought they would explain to us how billions were lost to looting, what are the plans to recover the stolen money? I think to date we've seen very little action by government to recover the stolen billions. We do appreciate that there have been some beginning of forensic audits at ESCOM, but we don't feel it's gone far enough. In fact, there's a need to have comprehensive forensic audits across the entire spectrum of ESCOM. Chair, I think to say that the 400 billion rand debt of ESCOM poses a threat to the very survival of the state is an understatement. But having said that, we were quite shocked that the new CEO, Phakamani Hadebe, spoke about increasing the debt levels to 600 billion rand. We don't know how would that be sustainable when the existing business model is not sustainable. And there's nothing really in the IRP which says we can turn the ship around. Maybe on a positive note, though the IRP is silent on the issue of nuclear in Russia, maybe we could take the silence as meaning this thing is buried and we can just simply rely upon the President's commitment that that is off the table. I think to say it would have been economic suicide would be a polite way of putting it. Chair, we were also quite disappointed that the IRP is silent upon the impact of the massive tariff hikes on the economy, on the consumers. It doesn't speak to the Madupi and Kusile massive budget overruns. It doesn't speak to the ESCOM chair, Mabuza's repeated calls to retrench 17,000 ESCOM workers. And if we take this weekend's comments from the new Minister of Finance, Tito Mboweni, where he speaks about needing to cut 30,000 workers, it's silent on that issue. This is a contradiction. It puts us in a very difficult spot as COSATU chair. When the President signed on behalf of government at the Presidential Job Summit last month, a commitment by the state that there will be no state retrenchments. But as far as we're concerned, ESCOM was part of that state, and that commitment must bind, must be bound to it. So in terms of our proposals, on this part, we think, look, we need a forensic, comprehensive forensic audit of ESCOM's expenditure, and without being too obvious, people implicated must be charged, arrested, tried and convicted. Their assets must be frozen and confiscated. We're not sure why government is so soft on criminals, Chair. Chair, we think the IRP needs to be revised to include a serious business model that will stabilize and save ESCOM. We were on to see that government instruct ESCOM that we cannot afford to increase our debt levels from 400 billion to 600 billion rand. The state can't allow SOEs just simply to run amok and do what they want. We would want to see ESCOM be instructed by government as the shareholder that there can be no retrenchments, and if there's a need to reduce the headcount, that should be engaged, and the starting point must be at management level. We'd want to see a business model that can save ESCOM from its downward trajectory. Chair, I think we'd also want to have a frank and honest conversation about how can ESCOM be expected to pay IPPs at the current set prices. Whilst IPP production costs are plummeting, we have set a one set tariff level for the IPPs, and this in fact is leading ESCOM dry. Chair, we think there are significant economic opportunities which can stabilize ESCOM and make it into a profitable SOE once again. We think that we should be investing in battery storage for a renewable energy baseload. We think there's a partnership with companies like Tesla, which in fact is led by South African. Chair, we are worried that the IRP doesn't speak to the impact upon imported renewable energy technology on local industries. We've already seen four companies in Cape Town and Stellenbosch close because of Chinese imports. We would want to see ESCOM revive our historical exports of electricity to neighboring states. And in fact, we think that as a leading electricity producer on the continent, we should be driving the continent's industrialization. But it can't do it if our tariff levels are higher than what neighboring states charge. Chair, I think also other key economic opportunities, save ESCOM, we feel, is in electric vehicles. Internationally, the trend is towards electric vehicles, moving away from fossil fuels. Already, Renault, Volvo are speaking the next 3 years, 5 years to move to electric vehicles. China's producing about 700,000 electric vehicles per annum. We are lucky to have a major auto manufacturing sector in the Eastern Cape and Gauteng. We should be engaging with those companies to produce electric vehicles locally for our local market, for the continent, for international exports. That will also help us move away from dependency on oil and the massive oil prices. So we think also for agriculture, there's an opportunity to protect the sector with biofuels, cogeneration, methane gas, especially for sectors like the sugar sector. But again, these sectors have struggled to engage with ESCOM and the Department of Energy over years. if we were serious about reindustrialization, then we need to have stable tariffs and also lower tariffs. We can't expect to reindustrialize when Eskom is getting 2 hikes a year above inflation. The IEP needs to have a serious plan to deal with municipalities who charge consumers for electricity and then don't pay that money to Eskom. We can't expect the entire country to pay, but we've got communities, areas, municipalities, which simply just do not pay. There needs to be an engagement in Soweto in particular. Chair, the IEP speaks about work and community ownership, but doesn't provide flesh to what does that mean, how are they supported. Chair, so we'd want to see a business model that's linked to the IPAP, the Industrial Policy Action Plan, linked to exporting exports to Africa, preparing for electric vehicles, linking to the agricultural sector. I think we'd want a very clear commitment that the workers will not be retrenched to Eskom, to renegotiate the IPP contracts so they can be affordable to Eskom and reflect the current production prices. I think Chair would also want to see Eskom's mandate to be amended to allow it to own and produce its own renewable energy. We cannot understand why Eskom has been prevented from doing that itself. Chair, we'd also want to see a very clear commitment that all renewable technology, not only the solar panels but the components itself, whether it's the glass or whatever, must be required to be locally manufactured. We should invest in battery storage capacity, and we should have a financial model that simply would allow Eskom to pay off its debts and keep tariff hikes in line with inflation. Chair, we do need to have a plan to ensure all municipalities pay for the electricity they consume. We can't simply tax those who do pay into submission. And I think, Chair, we'd also want to see a distribution, once again, of locally produced solar panels to indigent homes, RDP homes, emerging farmers, SMMEs, whether subsidized or free, depending upon the income levels. And I think we'd want to see a plan to establish community and worker-owned energy production. And again, we can engage the PIC to support that. Chair, look, I think as COSATU, we're in a very difficult spot because we've long supported renewable energy, knowing the impact upon workers' health. If you look at the impact of pollution in places like Mpumalanga, it's quite devastating, in Witbank and Middelburg, etc. We want to see action by government in terms of climate change. The water crisis, Chair, I think is a wake-up call for all of us. And of course, I think members would have seen recently the United Nations report speaking with the urgency of the next decade in terms of action by ourselves. The impact upon pollution on workers' health is quite devastating. But we also want to see action, social commitments by the mining industry, by Eskom, around addressing these issues. Chair, our plea is that we need to have a just transition plan. We are engaging with government and NEDLAC around it and look at how can we protect the jobs of coal workers, both in the mines and the energy. Also look at how do you protect towns which are based upon coal mines or coal plants and to work on a transition plan for them. So it's fantastic that government, through the renewable energy plan, has managed to create about 27,000 jobs in the Northern Cape. But we equally need to have a plan to create jobs in Witbank and Middelburg, etc., whereas coal plants or coal mines come to the end of their lifespan. We've got a plan to reskill those workers, to build new factories, for example, for solar panels, in those towns and to reabsorb those workers. And there is massive funding available for that, Chair. The UIF has pumped in billions of rands already to reskill workers. The Department of Labour, the CETAs, have also got specific funding available for that. And of course, Chair, we can engage with the PIC as well. So, Chair, I think other opportunities we think that are available, and this is part of our carbon tax engagement with industry and with government, is around creating other jobs. So as we lose some jobs, we have a plan to reskill and absorb those workers in other industries. And those speak to land rehabilitation, reforestation, water conservation and recycling, recycling and on an industrial basis for consumers and for industries. Look at more energy sustainable methods of construction and industrial production. Look at making buildings and homes green friendly and, of course, electric vehicle opportunities. In a nutshell, Chair, I think as COSATU we must say we reject the IOP. We don't think it'll take us anywhere. In fact, we think if we sit with it, it'll make the current crisis worse and possibly fatal for Eskom. I think we welcome the members' engagements. We're hoping that the IOP can be overhauled with oversight by Parliament to ensure this happens. And I think key components of the overhaul we'd want to see is the halting of the looting, which is still happening, recovery of the stolen money, a clear sustainable business model, the reduction of Eskom's debt levels and a just transition plan to protect jobs of workers and to protect the environment. So that is our submission in a nutshell, Chair. Yeah, I hope it's made some contribution to members. Mm-hmm. And if members have questions, we'll be happy to answer it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Chair, I now Kusatu recommends that the government or Eskom has been instructed not to increase the debt levels and also not to increase the or not to get rid of any positions in the company. You know, I agree in a sense, you know, it's criminal what that Eskom board pays itself exorbitant performance bonuses and the people that suffer. But the fact of the matter is that Eskom is completely top-heavy. They have about 30,000 people more. If you take the real value of electricity produced and what Eskom is paying and the people that they employ, about 30,000. So how can we overcome that? If you say that we mustn't get rid of anybody at Eskom, Eskom will have to get rid of some position. There's maybe one other thing that I... Eskom to ensure that all municipalities and communities... You know, this is a lack of oversight. A lack of oversight. We have the legislation, we have policies in place, but lack of oversight, not only from this committee, and don't get me wrong, Chair, from local government as well. It's completely become a wave after wave, and people is more and more connecting to lampposts, to whoever, and it became unstoppable. So I don't know, how would you suggest they have everyone pay. I know even people in Dainfan, one of the richest areas in Johannesburg, that doesn't pay for electricity. How do we stop it? How would Kusatu suggest?
Eskom is not a small thing. Eskom is not a small company that you can afford to let loose or let die. On many avenues, both the 50,000 workers, the host communities, the economy at large, the state because of the debt levels. We don't think it's workers who've caused Eskom to be in the crisis that it's in. The looting was done by Eskom's management and by other persons whom we know. We're not sure why we have this culture in society that we allow certain powerful people to loot. They want to pass the bill onto workers. They must pay for the sins of others. Chair, look, retrenching Eskom is not going to solve the problems. You can retrench tomorrow. Eskom will still die. This current business approach is going to die. You can't tariff your way out of the crisis. This thing that for the last 10 years plus you've had tariff increases far and above inflation, 15-25%. At times Eskom wants to have 2 tariff hikes in a year. All they're doing is to chase the dwindling consumers away from them, who are now moving off to their own renewable energy forms of electricity. And at this rate, Chair, Eskom will run out of customers. It's chasing away neighboring states' customers. It's chasing away local industry. We really need the real solution is having a sustainable business model. We think that sustainable business model is based upon five core aspects. One is to halt the looting and the bleeding. One is to renegotiate the IPP tariff levels. IPP production costs are plummeting, yet Eskom still pays the same level to those IPPs. It needs to deal with the issue of local municipalities who collect the tariffs from the consumers who diligently pay, and then the municipalities keep that money themselves. And then, of course, Chair, the economic opportunities we think is one in the exporting once again to neighboring states and to the continent, and the fact that we produce about 40% of the continent's electricity speaks to the hunger for electricity in the continent. And, of course, in terms of the electric vehicle industry, there's huge opportunities there. In the next 5-10 years, most cars will be electric, but yet we're not planning for that. Those for us are the real ways to deal with the crisis. Chair, even on the issue of the headcount ballooning actually has been at the SMS level, where it went from about 50 to about, is it 800 SMS level posts. The Eskom headcount actually is less than it is, well, is less today than what it was in 94. But again, Chair, look, we think a real opportunity is to sort out the business model. I think lastly, Chair, in terms of the issue of those communities which don't pay, look, Eskom and government need to politically engage in those communities. I think part of the issue is that the tariff hikes have made electricity unaffordable for some communities. We need to engage with that. And look, for households which are generally indigent, there should be a plan to redistribute the solar panels. The Department of Energy had a plan around that, but we saw in the past budget year, they simply stopped distributing those solar panels. And those would help make electricity affordable for communities. But look, largely, Chair, you can't have two rules for one country. You can't have consumers in 90% of municipalities whose electricity is cut off and they don't pay, yet you've got other municipalities which are allowed simply to get away with murder, so to speak, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. No, thanks very much for the presentation. Just to say, you weren't here yesterday, so we did indicate that we're hoping to have another round of a discussion. Mr. Kotze calls it a roundtable discussion, so that we can look at the inputs more closely, especially the more difficult issues that have come out in the presentation, so that we can see what can go into the revised IRP. But at least from the standpoint of the committee, and I'm definitely sure that's what the minister said, we would want to see the IRP finalized as soon as possible, so that we clear where we're going. There are matters relating to Eskom, which we have spent a lot of time dealing with. The court says that they will be coming here next month to discuss their corporate plan. Hopefully you'll attend so we can deal with all the matters you raised in relation to Eskom. So, but thanks for the presentation. Because there are no more questions, we'll take the next presentation. Thanks very much for coming. Lambert, is that you? I can see that.
Are you waiting for them?
we are ready to listen to you. So you can fix that.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable committee members, good morning. My name is Paul Lambert. Christine, my wife, and I live in a small rural community called Shiani. For those of you who don't know, it's Ward 12, District of Mzinga, Mzimyati, in the Kingdom of KwaZulu-Natal. It's a population of 1,200 approximately, and with the biggest employer being tourism, thanks to conflict of the past between Bantu, Brit, and Boer. The region is world famous for its battlefields, Berg and Bush. I would like to express the community's thanks for the electricity. As I was on my way here yesterday, they just made sure that I was going to present it and represent them as well. But sadly, we do not have any water. I am an old professional who has been involved in the energy sector for many decades, living and working on four continents. I have been involved in these plannings for day one, if you like. And this time, I decided I'm going to express publicly my opinion. My rationale goes as follows. Integration is the action of incorporating economic and social developments so as to improve the quality of life. The resource is the supply from which benefit is produced. And plan looks at the future based on the past measured against action. And if we go ahead and make all these plans and they're not realistic, nothing's going to happen. The general approach of policy is to recognize challenges, identify these causes, find solutions, and implement them based on a plan. Today, every aspect of social and economic intent is being readdressed by the government, as we're fully aware. It sets out on a path of growth, equality, and prosperity. This, then, in my opinion, requires new and decisive thinking, and even more so, in the energy sector. I think previous presenter fully concur with them because energy has been a debated subject for quite some time. Too long, probably. The problem statement is the IOP is a decision-making process concerned with the acquisition of least-cost energy resource, which takes into account the need to maintain equate reliable, safe, and environmentally sound energy services. Just to remind people to get that straight and the understanding. Therefore, coal will continue to play a role in electricity generation. However, I think it's clear that the investment must be made on new and more efficient technologies. Yes, I've been listening to this debate. We are on least cost. So I'm going to give you a number. If you look at the reports being made, table 7, etc., etc., it's approximately 50 to 60,000 rand per kilowatt if you want to measure it. Clean coal options, which have been tabled for quite some time, from the very first IOP that was mentioned, the NDP, the National Development Plan even mentioned that we should be looking against clean coal options, and this is a realistic approach because our energy is coal-based. This was taken seriously because via ESCOM, the government finance, with extensive research on underground coal gasification. And I feel that this should be promoted. UCT is an approach to energy production that allows for reduced emissions and other environmental impacts to be effectively managed. Stranded coal reserves. I was listening to, again, if I was a coal miner working on a coal mine, it's a fact that coal is getting deeper, more expensive to mine. Yes, it will put my work at risk, but here I'm coming up with an alternative. I can still give you the opportunity to mine this energy resource, but from a different approach, more cost-effective, more environmentally friendly, if you like. It's an option, and it should be considered. So here we have an example of stranded, think of this, stranded coal fields in an area called the Springbok Flats, Limpopo. There's agriculture, there's a bit of tourism, but in that region, it's right next to the coal fields, which are problematic. The steel mills, because of cost of electricity, shut down. There's a huge degree of unemployment. Yet, we have an opportunity where we can exploit the technology and create further opportunity. It's not the end. Power generation from nuclear is an interesting one, I think. I also am aware that there's people who don't like it. It's durable, it's expensive. I think all of these things, if you're a player in the energy business, you need to do your homework and understand. To give you an example, France has been 70% of its production of electricity is nuclear. It's been doing this since 1980, and I don't hear anybody saying anything like that. And if you look at their electrical tariffs, they're some of the cheapest in the world. So it kind of contradicts any statement that we shouldn't be looking at. But I'm going to add further reason why we should be looking at it. But what's important, yes, we see research and planning, but in terms of nuclear, there is another fact. A new build takes years from front-end engineering until the first kilowatt is produced. I don't see in the current plan any planning about new nuclear. Yes, it's mentioned in the period 2030, 2050, we've got to look at it again, but we need to be planning now. It's not going to happen just by itself. Now we come to another sensitive subject. I'm in the energy business, people don't like me, they shout at me all the time. But natural gas presents the most significant potential for energy supply, being the lowest least cost option. Again, it's fact, just look at these reports that are made up. The use of natural gas in the electricity sector, Table 7, positions it as a viable option in the energy mix, and it starts at 2026. But my concern is that there's no plan how they're going to do that. I heard Mr. Chairperson that the other day you asked, yes, where are we going to get this gas from? Then you referred to so-called master plans, but I don't see it anywhere. We need to look at, therefore, position is that it's a viable option, therefore global exploration to assess the magnitude of recoverable shale gas must be pursued in line with relevant regulations. We have amended regulations, Chapter 6. We've looked at the various acts from in cooperation with environmental sections, with the water owners, and an app. If you look at the regulations, there is no question in my mind that against our section of the Constitution regarding our environment and safety, it has now been considered. So why don't we take it further? But I also, once again, public perception, maybe some of this may make you smile. It's a note. Substantiated fact is that there is natural gas in the Karoo. There's no question about it. And the resource requires exploration. We haven't done anything about it. And we need to establish a usable reserve. But here's the thing. Shale gas can be exploited without harm. Am I being too long? Timed out. I don't even know how deep the time. You're going to tell me. I haven't been reading the...
Yeah.
Oh, is that what I do? Yeah. I've just been reading it. Oh, I do apologize, guys. It's my first. I had to press next. I've got it here in front of me. Slide whatever. I don't know where we are now. Slide 5. Where's that? Oh, sorry. Which one? You see, I'm getting younger. Yeah. But there's a number somewhere. Yeah, okay. Okay, backwards. I think we're there. Minus. Yeah, oh, sorry, go back previously. Yeah, here we go. So I'm going to, I do apologize for that chair. Note, substantial fact is that there is no natural gas. There is natural gas in the Karoo, and the resource requires exploration and the establishment of usable reserve. Shale gas can be exploited without harm to the environment. When water is scarce or unavailable in the industry, has developed methods using other incombustible fluids, such as liquid petroleum gas, nitrogen, or CO2. Propane is one of the safest options to use when you don't have water. Therefore, I can frack, as it's used now in this term, using no water and no chemicals, and with limited process water flowback, in other words, no waste. To date, hundreds of wells have been stimulated using these techniques, and is an accepted process. Sorry, I have a bad habit, but anyway, if you want to know what propane is and you have a question, I'll save it. I've got it in my pocket. It's this gas that you use to stimulate. It's incompressible. Biomass. So biomass and biomass gas has comes around. And yes, it has been ignored, but the potential sits there. This also can then be linked to, because of rural area in particular, the, what I call the municipal hubs. We've heard lots of discussion about how in rural area or municipalities are coping in terms of their energy needs and a plan. And let me give you fact the examples. You've got the Tequeni, 8 megawatts from gas, biogas from refuse dumps. You've got the Robertson Deep project, running at 3 megawatts. You've got Ungodwana, which now out of wood chips there in the middle of nowhere, produces 25 megawatts. You've got the Nkuzi one. This is an interesting one. They, when I was coming down yesterday, flying over, all I saw was all the sugarcane on fire. There's all this heat, all this energy going. We can use that and put it into tops, put it into a boiler and generate electricity. And by the way, I just pick up the phone and the generation or the plan will be in place tomorrow. It's already been done. It's already been studied. All the environmental aspects are being looked at. At the moment, it's in fight between one chief and the other about on whose property it's going to be. From studies made by the CSIR, EPRI, or EPRI, etc., various scenarios are presented. However, the recourse appears to be technically broad and therefore presents nothing new. South Africa's challenges are unique, and it requires something more meaningful that will put the country on a path moving forward and not just following the status quo. So I'm going to produce some facts and you can decide, the committee can decide. South Africa is a world leader when it comes to coal power generation with better efficiency, cleaner emissions, and reduced water usage. Yes, we've got new ones. Yes, we're hearing they're going to shut down ones, but also I'm aware that there are options which need to be looked at. Not necessarily on the first phase or the 2017-2030, but when we come to this program of concern, studying now, bring into plan on that second phase, 2030-2050, with probably revised power system, but using new technology and still using the resource that we have. It's not clear in the plan or any studies being made, therefore I'm using this term, nothing new, but I can produce something new for you. South Africa is a world leader in coal and gas liquids technology. Why don't we make use of it? If you look at the graphic there to the one side, the audience is right. That is a 150 megawatt power station in Sasolburg, which is generating electricity into that region. And they did it at a cost which is certainly attractive. Why don't we exploit that? We've got some others that are going down hand in hand. We know Malt Gas has done a similar type of thing. So we need to also look at these from our expertise in generating liquids from gas and coal. that we shall also still not exclude it, but continue with it. South Africa is a leader in underground coal gasification, as mentioned before, and it is definitely a technical alternative. It's cleaner. Cleaner meaning, okay, how can you make coal clean? I fully understand that. But at least it's reduced emissions, and it can be controlled much better. Less harmful. Don't need to put people underground, etc., etc. South Africa is also well-placed in the sciences of understanding. We often, I have got the opinion that for some reason we don't give ourselves credit. If you look at any world forum in the sciences, geosciences in particular, it's not unusual that sitting or presenting around the world is somebody from this red country. Why do we ignore that? We need to pull these things together, and I heard the term now, workshops. Workshops is one thing. We need think tanks, we need to come, technical talents need to become practical solutions. I've already touched on the subject that, you know, besides sun and wind, South Africa has a significant onshore shale gas resource that needs to be exploited. And I've also mentioned about biomass or other systems, wood chip, sugar, coal, waste. And by the way, there's a what I saw coming down. It's not very clear on the graphic, but you've got sugar cane on fire. Which one am I on now? Yes. Can I just also, on the subject of the gas issue, because again, it's not, I mentioned that, and it has been mentioned before, that basically this plan should be integrated with the National Development Plan, which then includes others such as IEP, etc., etc. In it, we also then, from shale gas, as mentioned, there is an opportunity for us, for example, to on-site, if you like, produce liquid petroleum gas. Now, you'll see that in the IRP, this has become a question mark because it's taking revenue away from Eskom, supposedly, and then we've got concerns about how is Eskom a model, a financial model, it's doomed. But we need to understand both of them and try and put those together as a plan because we also have municipal areas or rural areas, which is a challenge as well. We need to find a way that we can put the two together. So here's again, shale gas is generating electricity, but there are other opportunities. I can turn it into, in the Karoo, I can support sufficient liquid petroleum gas, which is a new energy form, new energy, you know, reduce electricity, cheaper and available, you know, and it's an industry and it creates an employment as a spin-off. This is not in the plan, and I don't expect it to be in the plan. But if you look at the National Development Plan, it should be part of the NDP. It's another one that I've interest a lot of people because I'm a grey old man. They ask me, so what do I think of the fourth industrial revolution? Well, I think it's great. There are opportunities now where we, for the first time, take youth in particular. By the way, I'm not, this is not a dream, I have done it many times. I've taken people out of high school, didn't look at their background, I merely had a question, can you read and write? Yes. Do you have an interest in what you're doing? Yes. And I took these people and I made them skilled technicians within a period of 20 years. This I did 20 years ago. And now we can do it so much better, thanks to the so-called industrial revolution. Because with the technology, I can to manage grid systems, I can use smart grid systems, and if I continue, is that you'll see also that I've completely lost now, but anyway, because it's something I'm passionate about, is that you can train people. I can train a pilot to fly a Boeing 700 or whatever the case may be in 2 years instead of 5 years and whatever it is, and I do it without risk. We need to look at these opportunities as well. Nuclear is also has an opportunity because we found helium in a natural resource in the Free State, and that particular technology requires coolant. Why don't we use it? And by the way, I've already mentioned the French. I've also mentioned then about containerization, something now in the modern world that don't look at the cost of building pipelines, infrastructure, when we can actually put all these technologies at source. It was mentioned also, and I agree with the previous presenter, that yes, there's this question about so-called stranded assets. Well, we can use them if we've got an excess. We have an agreement which was set up by SADC, and we can sell that power into our neighboring countries. So I don't know why we're questioning. But if you look, it's not in the plan. And just to end, South Africa has specific legislation in place so as to safeguard the environment and harm ensured quality and leading to a better life. And by the way, this is an example. Look at our mining charter. There should be no question whether we are going to create prosperity and a better way of life. In conclusion, energy security is a prerequisite for achieving economic growth. And for the facts presented and the development of South Africa's electricity infrastructure can contribute towards ensuring an economic growth and developments that as envisaged in the 2030 National Development Plan. The plan needs to be revised today for tomorrow using research, studies and investment. This will then ensure the uncertainty which we see in these plans will become a reality and substantiated as a living plan. I thank you.
Thanks very much, Mr. Lambert. Any questions? The honourable members have no questions. So, Honourable Mohamed Sal.
No, Chair. It's a pity that we don't have enough time. I would want Mr. Lambert to expand on the nuclear build program views that he has, given all the confusion that is out there. Why does he think that a government must speed up the implementation of the nuclear build program? Because there is too much opposition on the program itself. Probably because people don't know the detail of how and the implementation by government will go about. So I would like you to expand just in one paragraph on that.
Not one paragraph. Please.
Honorable Chair.
Yeah, please respond to that.
Honourable members. Yes, I also I agree with you that when you look into their so-called energy scenario and a global point of view, I'm not popular for this comment, but sadly mirrors and windmills are not going to work. If you look at our energy requirements, I mean, in 2016, fact is 3.14 billion people travelled by air. I didn't see too many mirrors or windmills. Fact is, our steel production loss on the 2016 worldwide was 3.7 billion tons. What I'm trying to say is, we need to find the transition from, and this is realistic transition, I'm not against the other faithful transition, is that you need to find something that's going to meet our energy requirements in the future. And at the moment, it's fossil, which has been phased out. It's a limited resource. It's a given. It's going to happen with oil, and it'll become eek. We close the last tap. There's no more oil. And when you shovel the coal, it's finished. We need something in place, and it's nuclear at this point in time. There's no question about it. So when you look at South Africa over the years, I think initially it saw that this is where we should go. Yes, they made a decision with Kubo. And by the way, Kubo is a stunning money. It's become a benchmark, by the way, in terms of how to run a nuclear power station. It had a bolt that got into a turbine one day, upset a few people. But it's history. It's track record. It's cost. It's maintenance. For the last, correct me, 30 years, it's outstanding. Then we, off the back of that, we developed our own system to reduce or 40, better technically and stuff like that, and high temperature reactors, which is still ongoing, by the way. And then we canned it. Why did we do that? We created all this intellectual property, and we just threw it away. We need to go back to what we have so we can get a reinvestment on that, because we are good at what we're doing these things. And if you look at the plan, yes, it's been delayed, I question why. We can do it safely, we can do it cost effectively. But what I think, what in, if you look at the Ipsos comment on there, if you go do your homework, and that's my opinion, and I'm not the only one who came to that, it's completely out. I think they've doubled the cost, and I don't even know where they got their numbers from. They must have been looking at some other book. Yeah, because I phone, how much will it cost me to do this? And the guy will send me a note, that's how much it's going to cost. They use this global database, and they make a global picture. It's not in South Africa. And then the big thing happened, though, we're sitting with a potential to add benefit to that industry, is that not only do we have to put it on the coastline and use seawater for pollution, we also have helium, natural helium, in the Free State, for example. So then you can downscale, reduce the risk, quicker build, little ones, and if you want the example, France. France has more than 50 reactors. And what they've done is they've scattered them, you know, around to reduce the risk and to manage them better as well. Because when one big one goes down, everything goes down. If you've got a whole lot of little ones, and I've mentioned to you, you can also put this now into smart grid, and we can manage these things. Switch them on, maintain, and enhance. That is the reason why we should be looking at nuclear. I hope I've answered your question.
Yeah, no problem. For a young man like you, there's no problem doing that. Another question?
Sure, thank you. I just want to add something on nuclear. Nuclear is not, you know, if you calculate the cost of the levelized cost of electricity, it's the sum of the cost divided over the lifespan. I've always said, and I don't want to repeat myself, I always thought that nuclear is very reliable and clean energy, but it's unaffordable. It's unaffordable to decommission nuclear, to safely store nuclear. This country, if we take, and you've said here that South Africa is world leaders in coal. We maybe are world coal, we've got abundance of coal in South Africa, but we are producing carbon dioxide 45% more than what's the world level. We must also think about the people that live in this country, not only about the coal and cheap coal. Underground coal gasification technology, you said, is also. Sasol was the only one that used that. Sasol is doing that. Synthetic gas that's been produced. But that makes coal very expensive. That's very deep, deep unmined coal that I use for that. That's one thing. Then you speak about onshore shale gas. You know, if you speak about the cost, think about it. It costs about 19 million rand to drill one hole on shale gas. That's not even the water. South Africa is the 21st driest country in the world, and that's actually dropped down as well with the bad rainfalls we had. This is really some of the things here that you said doesn't really live up to what you're claiming it does. We may be leaders in coal, but we are polluting the whole country. We are killing people in renewable energy. On the forbidding window, renewable was much higher or lower than what coal energy was produced. We came in with something like 87 cents. Coal generation comes between 1.80 and 4.80 a kilowatt hour. 4.80. And that's not even carbon tax, that 15 cents that we put, the tax that we put on that. So it's not comparing apples to apples. I'm sorry. Thank you, Chief.
When we have a round table, I'm sure we can express more of those views.
Sure.
No, I'm just saying that we'll have time so for you to speak on all of these. So I'm just saying that we will not be able to go into that discussion sufficiently now. So, but I'm just indicating to you, you are going to have more time to express your views on all of these things than before we finalize our report.
Chair, if I may, I don't want to repeat if the gentleman wants to answer me or wait, but I'm also...
Yes, I remember you've got to rush to...
I'm going to try to the industry here.
Yeah, but I don't want a lengthy conversation between old men here. But he can respond to comment on the things
through
he
the
said.
Honourable Member, if you look at my presentation, I think you've got a copy in front of you. Everything in there is derived from your IRP. I didn't make up any numbers. I merely put them together in a presentable format. So if you don't agree with those numbers, which you have now alluded to, then that's not for me. I merely drew from your plan or this committee's or IRP. If you look at the numbers that I've put in there. So... You know, you're saying it doesn't make sense. Well, that's a deduction made from your IRP. Oh, thank you.
Okay. Okay, Honorable Estes, and are you coming back?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay, Mr. Mabunda, Honor Mabunda, welcome. Okay, thanks very much, Mr. Lambert. Thanks for your views. I gave you a platform to speak. Now you go back there and I continue speaking.
I have been warned that I've been in this business for 2 years. The reason why they keep me away from them, I'm normally banned from all these competitions. But if I'm taken on, I certainly will respond.
Nobody's taking you on. In fact, I intend inviting you next time. I would like to listen to you. I heard you saying that you've been in the energy sector for a very long time, so I wanted to ask, where did you work exactly? So that we can talk about these things. But we will, because it has your contacts, we will get in contact with you. I do want to listen to you. And one thing you can be sure about is that, on the controversial issue, with subject we're discussing, of nuclear. I'm not allergic to that discussion at all. Absolutely not. And I don't agree with people being intimidated into silence just because they speak noise. I think that can we have a rational discussion? And then people must be beaten on the basis of the superiority of their ideas based on evidence, not to be intimidated into silence. That I don't agree with. So I have no problem discussing nuclear, in fact. When I have time next time, we're going to come back to discuss that issue. Don't intimidate anybody into silence. Yeah. It must be sure this thing is not workable for the country. In an open discussion, and we must all agree, it shouldn't be done. But not intimidate people. So you must feel free where you will be protected in this committee. Okay, let's go to the next presentation. Please don't respond to me. I was just making the old man comfortable that he can express his views. Okay.
Yeah. Is, are you Mr. Law?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah. We're ready to start. We can introduce your colleagues and then
yes, thank you, Chair. Beside me are Jane Boccalioni, who is a consultant to and a partner in the Truth and Energy campaign, which is a new organization formed to actually address precisely the issues you are addressing, which is to get beyond slogans and being silenced and to just try and get the facts on the table. And we will try to present that as objectively as we can. Next to me is a well-known South African expert on energy, Andrew Kenny, widely published, widely written, and extremely knowledgeable. I am known to many as the Free Market Foundation, and I'm not here in that capacity, although I'm perfectly happy to also say things that would be consistent with it. But the big thing that's not consistent with it is we'll be talking about a government-run energy policy, so as opposed to a market-based energy policy. So I can wear two hats, Chair, so I'll do that. Chair, if we can move on with these, I'm going to move quite quickly through them because there's a lot to cover. There is an outline of the areas we will be covering. There's seven areas, and I'm going to address each one in turn. But before we get to the first slide, I want to make a preliminary comment. The IRP envisages what one might call some kind of weird economic sabotage. It's actually quite strange. Everything it proposes has to be imported, and everything we have in abundance has to be abandoned. It's an interesting binary thing, and I would like people to consider that from a point of view of just being a patriotic South African. We abandon what we have, and we import what we don't have. This is essentially what is proposed, and we think this has got to be very severely considered as whether this is really what we as South Africans want. The first part of it is the energy imperative, and we need to be very clear about this. Energy tracks with prosperity. Energy and prosperity are the tightest correlation I have ever seen as an analyst, an economist, in social science. There is nothing closer and tighter. Basically, if you want to be rich, you have to have energy. If you have energy, it's not clear from this graph here, or from one that shows the same thing over a shorter period, which precedes which. But if you look at this graph very closely, energy availability, the provision of energy, tends to precede prosperity or economic growth. In other words, if you want to grow, you've got to start by having energy. That's what this graph here, which is the energy growth rate, the energy consumption for the world, tracked with economic growth in the world. This graph is roughly true for every country, and so we need to regard energy as perhaps the most important single thing that you are here to discuss. You are here to formulate energy policy, and you probably never get to do anything more important, and none of the other portfolio committees do anything more important. What decisions are made here in this IRP are the ones that will determine the country's prosperity and future. So, truth in energy is, firstly, there must be a rationally balanced mix of energy. So we will say a lot about nuclear, and the reason is because the IRP envisages getting rid of it completely, although suddenly, after 2050, it somehow magically reappears in at least two of the scenarios. So we are going to say that you need a balanced energy mix, and the reason is very simple. No one in this room can predict the future. So you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. And what the IRP proposes is putting all the eggs in the IRP and gas department basket. These are very, very highly risky choices to make. You have to be actually, you have to have a crystal ball. You have to be able to predict the future to be willing to recommend that. And nobody knows enough about the future to recommend what the IRP ends up recommending. It does have a built-in bias, and that bias is a bias for renewables, and it does not propose anything like a rational energy mix. And I repeat, nobody knows what that is because nobody knows the future. It is your responsibility to have a balance of some sort. You can have the balance tending one way or the other, but to do what is proposed here would be extraordinarily reckless and extraordinarily unpatriotic, to abandon what we have and import what we don't. That's really what is proposed. What is the appropriate energy is context specific. My wife and I have just built a house in the country, and we have renewable energy, solar and in fact gas, and wind. So that's a perfectly good and rational thing to do. But it's not rational for the grid, as we'll see. We'll get into that in a moment. There are simplistic, I'm sorry to say, in what appears to be a sophisticated document. It makes some extraordinarily and unforgivably simplistic assumptions about cost. For example, it builds in so-called social cost for coal and presumes no social cost for renewables, and doesn't mention whether nuclear has a social cost, which obviously it does. Everything has a social cost, everything has an impact cost. And then there ought to be all policies, as you well know, Chair, all policies in South Africa must be preceded by a comprehensive socio-economic impact assessment according to the guidelines published by the Presidency, and that should be done here. One has unfortunately not been done, and it would probably yield somewhat different results. It should be done independently, according to the fixed formula by the Presidency, managed by the Department of Planning, socio-economic impact unit, and it has to cover all aspects, including environmental, grid integration, and more. South Africa has a unique energy endowment. It's very, very well and richly endowed with coal, uranium, and thorium, all of which, including coal, are enough to last for many centuries. So to regard them as a limited resource is actually not to understand the quantity we have, which is enormous. We have essentially no gas, oil, hydro, or thermal, or very, very little, and this proposal is that we go in virtually entirely by the end of the process in the RP to those. We have minimal renewables technology and minimal resources that go into manufacturing renewables, and we have minimal wind or hydro, but we have substantial sunlight. Now, I repeat, this does not mean we're against renewables. On the contrary, we want to see renewables having its proper place in the mix. And the renewables are different. Wind is not as good, for example, as solar, because we have lots of sun and very little wind. We're not a windy country. And the wind we do have is in pristine, mainly touristic areas where we will be putting windmills with maintenance, roads, and along pristine ridges, which will have all sorts of unknown environmental consequences. The draft RFP envisages what I've already said could be considered a kind of weird, unintended economic sabotage for this country, certainly unpatriotic. Then let's say something about long-term realities. The reality is that in the long term, the world is going to have nuclear. There is no other choice. You cannot provide enough energy for the future world, I'm talking 30, 40, 50 years hence, with solar panels and wind farms. They will cover simply far too much land and generate far too much uncertainty and require far too much baseload backup. And the world is not going to like coal because of CO2 emissions and the other impacts of coal. For example, it's the most dangerous from a life expectancy point of view, but still a very, very good source of energy for South Africa. Nuclear is going to dominate. That's the fact. So you might as well stick with it. You might as well not abandon it and then sort of try and reinvent it after you've lost all your engineers and experts, which is what is proposed. Nuclear is the future. It is by far, by very far, and I can't tell you how big the margin is. If anyone wants the details, I'm happy to provide you with a 60-page paper I presented at a conference recently in America on nuclear safety. I'm happy to copy that to anyone who wants it, which goes into this in detail. It is by a very big margin, a gigantic margin, the cleanest, greenest, safest, and most unlimited and most reliable source of energy. It might also, depending on what one does about nuclear safety, be the cheapest, and depending on what one assumes about the cost, the price of the capital and how you finance it, it could be the cheapest as well. So it must rationally be a substantial part of the mix. To exclude it from the mix is highly reckless and certainly not taking the long-term view of energy on planet Earth, which is going to be nuclear, and pretty much all the long-term scenario planners would say so. Now let's talk about it being safe. Everybody loves to cite Fukushima and Chernobyl and others, and I'm just going to mention them briefly. Fukushima was not a nuclear disaster. It's actually quite amazing that it's called that. It was a nuclear triumph. It was the final conclusive proof of nuclear safety. I personally was anti-nuclear or very dubious about nuclear. I thought it was unsafe because of Chernobyl and of waste. Fukushima absolutely converted me to the view that you could not have a better proof of nuclear safety. Here you have an old first generation, about to be decommissioned set of power plants, of reactors. They are bombarded with the worst nature can generate. Successive massive earthquakes, successive tsunamis. You could not have a better controlled experiment in a laboratory. And how many people died of radiation, according to the World Health Organization? Zero. What environmental was damaged was done? Billions of liters of highly reactive water pumped into the sea. What happened to the marine life? Slight mutations in the first and second generation, and everything returned 100% to normal. So Fukushima is a fantastic proof that nuclear is by far the safest form of energy the planet knows. And it places the highest value on life, and we're going to get to that in a moment, so I'll move on. The life that nuclear places on value compared to others, including wind and solar and hydro. Anti-nuclear sentiment exists because people, unfortunately, have believed a lot of fake news about nuclear safety. Nuclear has to be delinked from corruption. You mentioned nuclear in South Africa. Unfortunately, as you well know, everybody immediately says, oh, corruption and dodgy deals with the Russians and so on and so forth. Please can we forget that and just discuss it as a means of energy, as a source of energy, as if there were no corruption. And whether there was or not, frankly, personally, I don't know and don't care. We're interested in the facts about nuclear. South Africans deserve truth. Nuclear has had a bad press. The nuclear industry is terrible at public relations. Let me tell you what it does, Chair, quickly. It's really quite bizarre, frankly. And I tell people in nuclear, including our South African nuclear people, that they are quite extraordinary. Now, let's imagine a restaurant in Cape Town suddenly starts running ads saying, we have found out why our previous customers got food poisoning, and we've improved our food safety in our restaurant. And year after year after year, they tell you how the lessons we learned from our customers who got sick, we are now making food safer and safer and safer. And all the other restaurants run ads saying, our food is wonderful, it tastes good, it's got good prices, and we've got a good ambiance. Which restaurant will you think is dangerous? The one that keeps telling you it's safe and safer. And that's what nuclear does. It's unbelievable how nuclear engineers and physicists and scientists keep telling us they've learned lessons to make nuclear safer when it is already by far, by a huge margin, the safest form of energy, by a massive margin. It's not even debatable. It's not even contestable. So the nuclear, anti-nuclear propaganda is unfortunately funded by vested interests. Here is a graph showing safety. These are the estimated deaths in every form of energy. Coal the highest, oil next, gas next, hydro next, solar next, wind next, and nuclear is the safest by far. Now, you might say, well, how do people die in wind energy? Well, just think about it. The materials have to be mined, they have to be manufactured, they have to be transported, they're factories, they have to be erected, they have to be built, they have to be brought down, they have to be maintained, they have to be decommissioned. People who fall and suffer in nuclear accidents die in wind, solar, hydro. Hydro has had actually many substantial deaths due to dam bursts. Nuclear is by far the safest. Now let me just mention that the number that's put over there is nobody's dying from radiation. Nobody has died from radiation. 60 or so people died from radiation at Chernobyl, but for the rest, nobody's ever died of radiation, and the World Health Organization says the increased cancer risk is absolutely minimal. So we must trust the World Health Organization, which our Department of Health fully has confidence in and trusts. Those are people building nuclear power stations, industrial accidents, not radiation accidents. And the industrial accidents in all forms of energy, nuclear is by far the safest, and on the right-hand side are the percentages they contribute to energy, primary energy supply. So, the global long-term energy realities are that nuclear is going to be the energy of the future. And I want to point out that the idea that nuclear should have no deaths, that it should be 100% safe, is really very strange. Nothing is 100% safe. Society accepts death all the time. We sacrifice people. I'll tell you what, for example, we have just short of 15,000 road deaths a year in South Africa. It's very easy for you, the legislators, chair, to end it, to bring it down to zero. Very easy. You just make the speed limit 1 kilometer an hour. So what you do now is you decide at the beginning of every year we are going to sacrifice, kill 15,000 people year after year for the convenience of being able to travel fast. Now in every aspect of life, the expenditure on a hospital, a clinic, everything, building safety, everything, we decide how many lives to sacrifice in order to gain the benefits. The biggest payoff per life saved is by far is nuclear. In other words, it's the one that saves most lives at least cost. You can easily eliminate road accidents, I say, by going to 1 kilometer, but instead what you do every year as a legislator is you decide we are going to kill 15,000 people for the convenience of traveling faster, which is fine. That's perfectly rational. Nothing wrong with that. Then I want to go into the LN limit, no threshold limits. I'm not going to go into this, but I have a paper on this, which I'll send you all, that nuclear is by far, by very, very far, not even debatable. It's like a giant margin, safest, cleanest, greenest, most environmentally friendly. Now, nuclear requires essentially zero land, zero CO2. Fossils require mining and land and CO2. Wind requires lots of land. Nuclear is safe and potentially cheap. We can discuss that at some level. A socio-economic impact assessment would look at all of the various factors, all of which we discuss in our papers submitted to you and to the Department of Energy. Then there's some additional considerations. High economic growth means jobs. We have 40% of South Africans unemployed, according to the national data, and we need lots and lots of growth. We need short, medium, and long-term solutions. We need political realities to be taken into account. Now, I'm going to touch on the climate debate. Now, some of you will know that Andrew Kenny over here next to me is an expert on the issue of climate and climate change and whether it's anthropogenic and whether it's not and what's happening to the climate. But I am going to say that we as energy people don't know. Are the climate skeptics or the climate junkies right? Which one is right? It is not settled science. We know that because they keep getting their predictions wrong. Therefore, the science must be bad or must be dodgy. We know that. So what we can say is that if there is climate change, man-made anthropogenic or human-made anthropogenic global warming, then nuclear is best. So if you accept climate change, then you must be for nuclear. It is by far the best way of avoiding global warming. If, on the other hand, you're a skeptic and a doubter and you don't think that climate change is a big issue, which, by the way, in a third world developing country, there's quite a strong case for that. We have to care more about the poor, maybe, than the environment. But that's a different debate. Then coal is best. You either have nuclear or you have coal, depending on your position on the environmental global warming debate. One of those. If you think it's not true, then coal. If you think it is true, then nuclear. Then in between, you can have renewables. Renewables will be a supplementary one somewhere between the two biggies, which must be nuclear and coal. Gas cannot be decided now. No one has any idea if we're going to find any gas in South Africa. No one has any idea what future gas prices will be, what the availability will be. And if the rest of the world goes as is proposed in this IRP, then gas prices are going to go up spectacularly because of demand. That we should be able to predict. But then also there is no provision made for the rand, for example, exchange control fluctuations. We will be importing it. The rand is 95% lower than it was in 1980 when it was R1, $1.20 to the rand. We've lost 95% of its value. Is there any reason to believe we're not going to lose another 95? So far, there's no reason. Inflation continues, the rand continues falling. So we have no idea whatsoever what gas will cost. We certainly don't know enough to bank on it being available at the prices that are speculated. The assumption in the IRP, unfortunately, is that someone knows what the future price of gas will be. No one does, and no one can. It is simply impossible, just as no one knew what the current price of oil will be, which is why we now have the highest petrol prices we've had, because everyone got that wrong, and no one knew what the rand would be worth. In other words, we didn't know how many rands oil would cost us. And we have no knowledge of the future for gas, just as we had no ability to predict oil. So, what we want to say is our recommendations, this is the last slide for the IRP 2018, is that the renewables bias needs to be removed. It needs to be balanced. There should be no bias, preconceived bias in favor of renewables. It should be properly costed. There are all sorts of lacking costs of integrating renewables into the grid. We are for renewables, provided they are a rational part of the mix and that they are properly costed. The real cost of renewables is worked out. The only way to find out what nuclear and others will cost is to request quotes, request information. There are assumptions about the cost of nuclear which are entirely unjustified. Nuclear power plants are now being built and contracted for at much lower prices. This $1 trillion myth that floated around was just that. It was fake news. There is no reason to believe that there ever would have been a trillion, and even if there were, whatever it would be, say half a billion or half a trillion, it would be spread over the period of construction, which would be, for example, 10 years. In other words, a perfectly affordable amount annually, not a one-off big chunk. And then it would be financed anyway. So the draft IRP does have, unfortunately, some flawed assumptions, and we want to refer you to the NIASA submission, which points out what they are, factual flawed assumptions. And the renewables integration is not fully costed. It's not included in what the impacts are on other aspects of the grid, and it relies on preconceived conclusions. There is no level playing field. All options should be fully internalized costs. In other words, a renewables IPP contract should say, we will deliver to you reliable, constant energy. That's what comes out of this plant. They have to have the batteries. They have to store it. They have to be able to provide for when the sun doesn't shine or the wind doesn't blow. That should not be Eskom's problem. That should not be Eskom having to find a way of dealing with it when the wind stops blowing. And so there must be internalized costs, continuous predictable supply must be bought, and those who supply it have to bid on an equal level playing field, no favors. Everyone must say, we will deliver reliable energy and this is the price we will charge you. And then you don't just go for the cheapest, then you go for a rational energy mix. So Chair, thank you for your attention, and I'm very distressed to see that you clearly didn't like what I said something somewhere along the way, but I hope what we can at least persuade you all to do is don't throw South Africa out with the bathwater. Don't throw away what we have, import what we don't have, rather create a rational, balanced mixture of sources of energy. So with that, I don't know if my colleagues want to add something. But we're happy to take questions, and like when I was at university, questions are always very easy, I just often don't know the answer.
Yeah. Wait. There's somebody who said he's touching me there at the back. I think he's from ESCOM. So, just Mr. Lowe, just repeat the part where. So I didn't listen to you because I was looking at him misbehaving there. That's the part that your proposal of making about ESCOM, just repeat that part.
Yes.
I've seen that written down by somebody somewhere. But can you just repeat it?
Just remember that the IRP 2010-2030 has been reversed 180 degrees. That tells you how bad we were then at predicting the future. We should have the same humility now. We should not think we know better now. ESCOM should not try to predict the future. ESCOM should act responsibly and maturely, and it should say, we ESCOM, if it's going to be a single buyer, it doesn't have to be, that's another aspect of energy policy, we ESCOM will call for bids. We will buy power, and we want power to be reliable, continuous, and delivered. We don't want, as ESCOM, to have to deal with other people's inability to supply power when the wind doesn't blow or the sun doesn't shine. ESCOM should not, for political reasons, have to support IPPs. Now, let me say, you do know that my other capacity is the Free Market Foundation. You'd expect us to like IPPs. They're private. But no, we want ESCOM to have the best possible energy policy for this country. So we support ESCOM. I have sometimes shocked people when I say I don't think NERSA should regulate ESCOM energy prices. It should be able to charge what it likes, but it should at the same time face competition on a level playing field. But the crisp issue here, Chair, is that ESCOM should say, we will buy power from anyone. Nuclear, coal, renewables, hydro, anyone. But we want that power to be dependable, reliable, and constant. You cannot say to ESCOM, we are going to give you power and make you pay for it when the sun happens to shine, and if a cloud comes over our panels, bad luck, you have to find another way of supplying it. That's not fair to ESCOM. ESCOM should be sold constant, reliable power at a pre-agreed price, fixed price, and not have to provide backup for when a supplier's power fails. That shouldn't be ESCOM's job. So we see ourselves as more on ESCOM's side than ESCOM is. We see ourselves, we think ESCOM has been a victim of political agendas and vested interests. We want to liberate ESCOM so it can decide how to generate and how to buy power and not be told that it has to buy from approved suppliers that are unreliable.
I can't believe Free Market Foundation wants to liberate ESCOM. but I will take questions. Mr. Kosek can tell you, when you were showing me the list, I saw Free Market Foundation. I was close to saying, take them out. Because I think I don't like the Free Market Foundation. Since I came here to Parliament, I've had the privilege to appreciate the diversity of South Africans more. And I think I'm beginning to like them more in their diversity. So they must not be shut down. Everyone must express their views. I've not read what we're going to put toward them. So, but I'm quite sure that Honorable Mohammed Salah is quite impressed. So let's take questions. I don't know what we're going to do with this. The more we listen to these presentations, the more complicated it gets for the finalization of the RP. I just have two questions for you and. So the honourable members can add if they want to. Two things. You see, Mr. Law, you say that you can either, depending on where you stand, you can either have coal or nuclear. There are many people who came here. They say, no coal, no nuclear. So they are not saying either or. They say, no coal, no nuclear. I want you to comment on that. The second one is the the issue of the costs. I've listened to the rest of what you've said about nuclear, but I haven't heard you well on the issue of costs. I heard you about the 10-year spread, but you know, I must say that having listened to the discussions to date, things started with this is not, it's unsafe, but towards the end of the discussions, everybody's concern was cost. The rest had been resolved, I think, to a large extent, but everybody's concern was cost. So I want you to speak more on that on the issue of cost. Because we have got to come back to this. Too early to, I don't want to express my views now. Committee members will decide what they want to put in the report that we'll submit after the hearings. But you see, in the same way that I object, I feel offended by people being shut down, intimidated into keeping quiet. The same thing applies when people tout things. So, no. Okay, so when you want to discuss nuclear, they say, you people can't be trusted. This, it is going to be large-scale corruption, and then you can't have a discussion. So we say, okay, let's put the corruption issue aside. Can we just discuss nuclear for a moment? So we don't want to discuss that, because everybody thinks, oh, no, this is going to be corruption at a scale we have never seen in this country. So maybe it's true, it could happen, but that's not nuclear. That's not nuclear energy. Can we have a discussion on nuclear technology? And then we can have a discussion about your fears of corruption. But we put the two things together, and then because we're throwing out corruption and throw that, the baby with the bathwater, as you say. That I find unacceptable. So I have my own views, so sometimes people tell me, shut up. So I shut up, so it's okay. But no, don't intimidate people because of the level of noise you make. Let's not do that. Let's have a rational conversation as South Africans. Come to a conclusion. Why disagree? Let's agree to disagree. But let's not intimidate one another. So I'm not sure about this thing, of course. Nobody has, up to date, convinced, at least me, on the issue of costs. I think I've up to now, agree with those who continue to say you must be careful about costs, especially with the where the state of our economy and where we're likely to go into the future, this may be unaffordable. I listen to that. I don't want to listen to the other things. I've heard enough of those. But on the issue of cost, I must say that I do listen that maybe this is it's an issue that must appear attention to. Whether this is going to get into the RP ultimately, I don't know. The executive will have to make the call. But at least from where we sit as the committee, we want to be sure that we have heard the facts, and we're making our proposals on the basis of the evidence before us, not because on the basis of the noise, who shouts the loudest. It's on the basis of, is there evidence for the proposals we're putting forward? And then we put forward the proposal. Then they'll be considered, not considered, it's okay. So next time you come here, we'll tell you the reasons why we came to the following conclusions. Okay, so the old man there taught me to be passionate this morning, so let me step back now to chair the meeting and leave my passion. Okay, but can you just talk about the cost?
Yes, sir. Chair, thank you very much.
And respond to this. No coal, no nuclear.
Yes, yes. I'll do that first, and then I'll pass on the cross to Andrew Kenny. Chair, you might not have liked the Free Market Foundation, but I'm afraid what you're saying, I think we like you. That's all music to our ears, and we agree with you completely. So let me just say that the mistrust and dislike is not mutual. But Chair, on the question of no coal, no nuclear, the point is this, that if there is global warming, and if global warming is caused by CO2 and other emissions, greenhouse gases, if that's true, which is the predominant view, so that's the popular view, if that's true, then by far the best form of energy is nuclear. It is the one that produces least environmental impact, requires least amount of land, least amount of mining, least amount of disposal of decommissioned waste. It's by a very, very, very big margin the best form of energy if you believe in global warming. Okay, that's the popular view. Nothing comes close. All of the others, hydro, renewable, gas, coal, all of them require very substantial CO2 impacts. And we can go into what they are, because the renewables have created a myth that they do not entail environmental impacts. They do, and we can go into the detail if you wish. On the other side, if you're a skeptic, if you think there's no global warming, or you think there is global warming but it's not caused by people, then you have to be for coal. Then the cheapest, best form of energy, if you're not worried about CO2 emissions, is coal. So the best form of energy, if you believe in global warming, is nuclear. The best form of energy, if you don't, is coal. Now, since this is apparently a serious debate, goes back and forth, what we in our IRP should do is have a mix of both, so that at some future date we can see where the global warming thing is going, and we can veer off towards nuclear or veer off towards coal, depending on which side of the debate the future rests. We don't know that now. Nobody knows now. Just to give you some degree of uncertainty, it has been predicted that global temperatures are going to rise, and for something like 18 years now, according to the NASA data, the planet has not been getting hotter. So maybe there was something wrong with the models, maybe there's something wrong with the predictions, maybe it's a pause, we don't know. But the point is, we don't know. And so what we should do as a country is we should not put all our eggs in one basket. We should not assume global warming is true, or we should not assume it's untrue. We should assume it might be true. And the balance of forces is that it is true. In that case, we need more nuclear. Nuclear is the way to go if global warming is a genuine concern. Coal is the way to go if it's not. Renewables are in between. They can be supplementary on either side. They're neither one nor the other.
But Mr. Roy, your problem, you say either or. People say none. They say none of the two. No coal, no nuclear. Is that such a scenario?
No. Sorry, Chair, thank you for that. That is completely irrational. There's no basis for saying neither. You can argue, if you believe in global warming, that there should be no coal. You can argue, if you don't, that there should be nuclear. But you cannot argue you should have neither. There is no rational basis for arguing there should be no coal and no nuclear, especially not in South Africa. It's actually frankly outrageous that any South African can even think that. We should use our uranium.
South Africans don't think that. They write that down.
Well, I would say you need to actually question their patriotism.
Okay.
And their
can we deal with the cost then so that we can...
Yeah. I'm handing over to Dr.
All right. Mr. Kenny, thank you. Costs is one of the biggest misunderstandings of all about both coal and renewables. Here in this IRP, that solar and wind, which they call renewables, is the least cost solution. In fact, it's by far the greatest cost solution.
the most expensive option for South Africa's electricity supply by far is solar and wind. And if you combine that flexible source, by which they mean imported natural gas, then you've got the most expensive possible electricity for South Africa's future. What their thinking is based on fantasy world models coming out of the CSIR that doesn't look at the real world, it looks at fantasy world. In the real world, the CSIR model was actually implemented by South Australia. They actually did what the CSIR model suggested. By coincidence, they probably haven't read it. They had a mixture of solar and wind and gas, of which Australia has got in massive abundance, unlike South Africa. They implemented it. The result was electricity prices went up into the stratosphere, at one stage reaching 2 years ago 140 rand a kilowatt hour, which is about 200 times more than Eskom selling price, and then they had two complete blackouts of the whole state. In other words, it was a disaster. Solar and wind are the most expensive option. If you look all around the world, without exception, every single country, the more solar and wind they have on the grid, the more expensive their electricity. There's a graph of that. And with nuclear, it's the opposite. The more nuclear you've got on the grid, the cheaper the electricity. So in Europe, France is about 75% nuclear, and it's got just about the cheapest electricity in Europe. Germany is now moving more and more and more renewables, less and less nuclear, and electricity prices are going up, 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 up the whole time, with huge problems for poor Germans. Germany's a rich country, there are poor people who are now suffering energy poverty. The industry, which is very strong, is under threat. Denmark is the world's biggest, has the world's biggest fraction of wind energy in its grid, and the most expensive electricity in the whole of Europe. The fuel costs are very, very low. Operations and maintenance is reasonably low. Capital costs are quite high. They're quite high, but not extraordinarily high. And if you use a realistic cost of capital, which the IRP does not do, it uses a ridiculous 8.2% real cost of capital, which is absolute nonsense. In real life, Eskom's cost of capital would be about 3%. If you use that, if you recognize that a nuclear station, a nuclear unit, lasts for 60 years, has got a load factor of 90%, unlike wind with a load factor of 35%, then nuclear usually comes out as being the cheapest source of electricity of all. Only exceptions are if you're in a country that's got massive, very cheap gas or massive, very cheap oil, you know, like Saudi Arabia or something like that. Otherwise, nuclear is the cheapest. For South Africa, nuclear is the most affordable energy for the future. The most affordable. And I can give you models that I worked up, all the assumptions in showing that if we went nuclear now, using costs from around the world, we could charge, the nuclear plant would charge about 80 kilowatt hour, about 80 cents a kilowatt hour in the beginning, would pay off the plant after about 25, 30 years. It would have a levelized cost of electricity over its lifetime of around about 40 cents a kilowatt hour. In other words, nuclear, and I can give you all of the facts, all of the evidence, all of the calculations, nuclear is our most affordable option. Solar and wind are by far our most expensive option.
Sorry, Chair, if I can just add a very brief point. The IRP, in a sense, acknowledges that. The IRP has this interesting contradiction, the draft. It says the price of renewables is falling, the cost, but yet all its scenarios show the price of electricity going up by substantial amounts, 40%. Now, if the cost of renewable energy is falling, we should see falling energy prices, but the IRP predicts rising energy, substantially rising.
I think you spend too much time that you're supposed to here. So thank you very much. Let's have the next presentation.
Thank you, Chair. We're very honored, and thank you for the opportunity and the committee.
Thanks. Thank you very much. Alternative Information Development Center. Are you there? Oh. Can we have some idea how many members of the community are still around there and intend speaking later on? Okay, not so many. I'm saying, yeah, they're known as they are. I just want to see, I'm just looking at the time. So, yeah, it looks like they'll have a few hands, about three. Okay. We'll manage. But are you speaking? I said, who intends to speak? Well, there's quite a few of you. Okay. Alternative information. Can we start?
So I don't know if my voice is audible enough. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members present. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to raise our concerns with regards to the draft IRP. So my name is Shumirai Mudawano, and I work at the Alternative Information Development Center. So we are basically a 22-year-old Cape Town-based organization. So
can you let her finish and I'll come back to that point.
So, as I said earlier on, we are a 22-year-old Cape Town-based organization situated here in Observatory. So we produce and promote alternative knowledge together with analysis on a broad range of political, ecological, together with political, economic issues. So I think one of the major things that we do with that are linked to the IRP is that we were instrumental in the establishment of what is called the 1 Million Climate Jobs Campaign that was established in 2011. And so this campaign was established together with trade unions, faith-based community organizations, alongside with research institutions and other NGOs, the non-governmental organizations. So I think the reason why we don't have a PowerPoint slide or something that you want to see is that there is no point in reinventing the wheel. We are here basically endorsing what other NGOs, which I'm going to name, have already said, together with maybe adding just a few and expanding on some of the things that they mentioned, which we produced a booklet on. So we fully endorse the position of the Center for Environmental Rights, the Energy Research Center, together with groundwork submissions. But then we would want to make substantive reference to what the groundwork submission noted from one of our 1 Million Climate Jobs booklet, which I will explain furthermore down. So the first thing is we're very happy or excited that we do have the Integrated Resource Plan, in other words, an energy plan for South Africa. But however, we feel like there are a few things that need to be changed, or we feel like there are a few things that need to be addressed with regards to the IRP. So the first thing that I'm going to talk about is I've entitled it the new energy production shift, in my own words. So I think by now the IRP should be providing an urgent plan from moving away from fossil fuels to something that is better for the environment. I'm going to reflect on something which was recently released, which is the IPCC report, which talks about how we need to at least have a 1.5 degree threshold if we want to survive. And when you talk about the 1.5 degree threshold, remember for us, particularly South Africa and those below the equator, that 1.5 degrees means double for us. So which means we need to start acting now. In other words, if I can use an allegory, if you begin to see signs that you're pregnant, you begin to make preparation. So it's the same thing with us. The signs are there, and there is research to prove that climate change is there. Hence, we ought to start taking action now. So one of the things that should be addressed by the IRP is, for instance, no new coal power plants. Not only is coal bad for our environment, not only are there externalized costs of coal which are not usually factored in when they calculate the price of coal, but then coal has also become very expensive to produce energy from, and there is research to prove that. And then another thing is, South Africa as a country has one of the best wind and solar resources, not only in Africa, but in the world. And to top that off, we also have got the raw materials that are used to produce some of the things that are required for us to set up some of these renewable energy plants. But what happens to them? These resources are mined here in South Africa, exported to other countries, manufactured into tools, and then we import them back here at a much expensive price. Yet we are sitting here with the resources in that we need to manufacture the power plants. We are sitting here with a vast pool of unemployed people that can be skilled so as to initiate this local renewable energy that we have. So these are some of the things that we ought to consider. And also, I think one thing that we also have to note is that when we talk of energy and why energy is very important is the fact that energy is not an end to itself. So in other words, when the RFP is being drafted or when an energy plan is being designed for South Africa, there are certain things that we need to take into account: the cost, the access of the electricity, the damage or the environmental impact of the type of electricity where it's going to be produced from. Because remember, there's no point saying we are going to produce electricity using such and such, for instance, coal, which is expensive, yet we sit with a large number of people who can't actually afford the electricity. In other words, it makes no sense. And then I think another important thing that we need to work on is phasing out of coal. And this is not necessarily because renewable energy has become cheaper, but then there has been de-investment in coal. And in other words, this has been through the introduction of things such as energy efficiency. Remember when we started having blackouts here in South Africa, people started resorting to other sources of energy. And that also led to the demand for people to get electricity that is produced by Eskom from coal also decreased. So those are some of the things that we need to consider when we're looking into this. And then just to cement on that also, coal is slowly becoming a stranded asset. In other words, it's becoming risky investment-wise. And then there's also another important thing when we talk about this whole IRP and as to what type of resource we want our energy to be produced from. And we need to talk about something called a just transition. And we need to know that whenever we talk about energy being produced from a particular type of resource, maybe be it coal, be it renewable energy, there are workers which are involved in there. And those workers' needs need to be addressed along the way. So some of the points that I'm going to spell out here are much more expressed in our book, which I've brought copies for the members, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to leave them here so that you can read our booklet. I'm just going to flip it around so that you can see it. So we need to reaffirm the adoption of a sustainable alternative employment for all workers whose jobs are going to be threatened by this low, by us moving to a low carbon economy. And remember, we already have got power plants that are lined for decommissioning. So those are some of the things that we ought to be considering, that what is going to happen to those workers. Because before we even start talking about introducing renewable energy, there are those plants that are already lined up for decommissioning. In other words, those workers' lives are already at risk. And those are some of the things that we need to start taking into consideration. So there's need for that clarity with regards to the just transition. How is it going to take place? If we are going to move from a particular sector to a particular sector, then there has to be certain things that have to be said. And then also, another important thing is, it also needs to spell out issues of reskilling. Having an overview of how many people are employed in the coal sector, how many are within the bracket where if the way energy is produced is to shift, can they be reskilled? And what happens to those maybe that would have retired by then? And then in our booklet we propose, and it explains better, that there should be a guaranteed grant for those that are going to be affected by this transition from to a low carbon economy. So those are some of the key things that we feel the IRP should be addressing. Because when we talk about the energy plan, we're talking about the people. We're talking about the future of the people. So we need to be very concerned. And then another important thing that I would want us to talk about is this 1 million climate jobs campaign that we have. As I stated earlier on, it was launched in 2011. And one of the main objectives of this campaign is to address the major challenges that South Africa is faced with. And what are these major challenges that South Africa is faced with? South Africa is faced with a high rate of unemployment together with this climate change crisis. People in Cape Town can relate to the drought. It's a sign that things that used to happen maybe in every 20 years can begin to happen in 2 years. So which means we ought to act now. We can't wait for a catastrophe to come before we start acting. So how then does the 1 million climate job aim to address these two challenges that we're facing as a country of South Africa? So we talk about what are called climate jobs. So these climate jobs have got the ability to deal with the two things, which is unemployment together with climate change, which we know that the energy plan by all means tries to take into account and also address. And this is through reduced carbon emissions, because we are advocating for the introduction of renewable energy because of its benefit it has for the environment that we depend on for all the other economic, social, and other activities that we depend on as human beings, and also factoring in the costs that are involved as well. So we talk about that. And then also, some of the key things that the 1 million climate jobs is instrumental about is mining rehabilitation. Because remember, whenever we produce energy, we're talking about your areas where after mining happens, then we've got dilapidated land, degraded land, polluted water. I'm talking of your people who are in Mpumalanga. Those guys are living under... They've got this cloud of pollution above them. I won't even get into the details of the externalized costs, the amount of deaths per year due to the coal production, those people are living there. But then in other words, the question is, in as much as that is taking place, that's already there, but what happens to those people? Because if we are going to transition into a different type of economy, then that means we need to deal with the problem at hand. And hence, we talk about something which is called mining rehabilitation. What is it that can be done within those areas that will not continue to damage the environment those people survive on? And that's when we begin to explain more about reskilling, we explain more of assessing what type of renewables can be introduced there or what type of programs can be introduced there so that the people's lives can continue after. And then also, so all of these, our aim is to provide, or our aim or the mandate of the campaign is to provide decent and sustainable jobs. But all this can only happen if the government is instrumental in the facilitation of a local renewable energy manufacturing sector. Because I know there are going to be questions about how the people in renewable energy, they're only employed the first year or maybe the first 2 years when they are digging up and putting up the plants. What happens after that? I am aware of that. But then the thing is, we need to have a local manufacturing industry in here in South Africa, not only for the sake of having it, but because we do have the necessities to have the local manufacturing sector. So when we do have a local manufacturing sector, that would mean that all this can only come if we move from the core and we say all of our electricity needs to come from renewable energy. And not only is renewable energy good, but then the costs also are much lower, which will increase the demand for energy. And when demand increases, that creates the potential for the necessity of a local industry. Because it will become very expensive for us to continue importing when we ought to start doing the things ourselves. And this is not only good for South Africa, but then this has got a potential for a huge market for Africa. We could be able to export even the energy, the excess energy. So those are some of the key things that we have to also look at. And then also another thing that can also increase the demand is how we should also think of certain things, such as if we are to electrify things such as transport. Imagine what that can do. It can create a demand for energy, and it will also create jobs for our people. So it's not just about having energy for the sake of energy, but having energy at the same time speaking to the needs of the people. And then I think the other thing that I feel that we also want to address is the whole idea of surplus. If we say we are burdened by a surplus, why then do we talk of introducing more energy from coal, particularly which is bad for the environment among other reasons, yet we are saying we've got a surplus? Why not, maybe, why do we need new coal then? Why do we have to add more facilities if we've got a surplus? So let's maybe deal with this issue of a surplus. The truth of the matter is that there is no surplus. But then, because of over-projection, especially particularly, so now we need so much kilowatts of energy for megawatts of energy, and then what happens? They don't sell due to so many reasons, and then people now, because they don't sell and they need to meet their revenue projection, especially for Eskom, they increase the price. And when you increase the price, the demand goes down. And when the demand goes down, it's not necessarily there's a surplus because everyone has electricity, but there's a surplus because the prices are high. And in other words, that's not the right way of saying energy, we're having energy. So in other words, we need to do this. So if there's truly a surplus, then there's no need for the new coal that we're going to talk about later on. And then I think, so my last comment would be, I mentioned it earlier on about the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the recent scientific report that was released. It's saying we need to start to act now. We don't want to act when things are already overboard. But then my worry is, in as much as we are supposed to act now, why is it our own government hasn't said anything or commented anything with regards to this? So with that, I thank you.
Thank you very much. Alternative Information Development Center. Do you want to ask a question, Honorable Hamisa?
Thanks, Chair. Are you aware that South Africa is an energy mixed country? Because if you are saying that we must phase out coal. It means that we no longer an energy mix country, because coal is part of our mixture of energy. So you can't say that we must phase out coal or part of our mix in energy. And my question, Chair, is that if we are phasing out coal, we are inviting an industrial revolution to our country. Have you thought of that? And how do you expect government to deal with that when it arises? Because you are not going to be responsible for dealing with that. It is our government that will be responsible. And what do you want us to do with more than 60,000 coal that we have in our reserve? Did you consider those things when you arrived at this particular decision that we must phase out coal?
Thank you. Thanks, Honourable Mohammed.
Okay.
You can respond.
All right. So I think with regards to the energy mix, I am aware. But then when we're talking about how we're phasing out coal and inviting an industrial revolution, in my view, I would suggest that if we, in as much as we, there is no point, yes, we do have coal reserves that we need to use, but then if they, what's the point of using those coal reserves when they damage the climate that we depend and thrive on? Rather, let's have them stored underneath for maybe in case of an emergency. Not necessarily go ahead because we've got reserves that we have.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're done. You're based here in Cape Town, so I'm sure Honorable Ambassador, we'll find time to have some more conversation with them on these views. But I want to thank you for the presentation and open up for the members of the community who are here to ask to make their comments, so that we can move towards closure. We'll need lunch before we go to the listen to the new Minister of Finance.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. So we're going to hand over the platform to members of the community. And I have an experience now of what you do when you start speaking. So I end up having very little control over what happens. So, but I'm happy with that. Director General, are you still here? I've heard something here. I've learned something here this morning. Not this in the morning, earlier on. If you want to be in government, you must be prepared to have guards. That is, if you want to. You may not want to be in government, but if you want, you must be prepared to have guards. If you are in government, you must have guards. Otherwise, you'll get out of government. It's very important. Otherwise, there will be no consistency. Every time the wind blows this way, you move. Okay. Members of the community. Yeah. But because we are a democratic country, we must first listen and then come to a conclusion. And then when we come to a conclusion, we must have got to stay the course. Members of the community, can we have your hands now? I'm just going to take hands, all hands. You just speak and then hand over to the next person. I'm not going to speak until the last person. Thank you very much. In that order, from starting the gentleman and then the lady. Or the lady want to start first? Okay, go ahead.
Okay, that's fine. As long as, is it worth it?
Very
oh, there it is. Okay.
Sure.
Okay, please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for the opportunity. I'm going to try and present this in English, although ek wil vir my demokratiese reg gebruik maak om van my huisstaal te praat, but I'll try and be as accommodative. Firstly, I would just like to thank the fact that we actually now have an IRP that is actually on the table instead of what we've had with the past reshuffling and so forth. And it is this plan is very, very important for us as the people of the country, because it depends on it will have an impact on our livelihoods. Me coming from the Climate Justice Action Group, I have to say that I agree with some of the stuff that's in the IRP, but majority of the stuff is a little bit iffy, if I have to say. Firstly, we do, like the lady from the AADC said, we do have a surplus of electricity at the moment, but the means of by which it has been achieved can be dubious. But there's a few stuff that needs to be stopped. Because we have a surplus already, why is the IRP trying to include new coal, that 1,000 megawatts somewhere later on, whilst we have a surplus? Secondly, even though the IRP states that renewable energy is the cheapest, within the IRP, it still opts for something else. And then thirdly, which is most important for us coming from communities, is the externalized costs of the energy choices are not being considered. Our people are being polluted by this coal-based electricity industry. We are getting, people are having black lung diseases, lots of asthma, lots of sinusitis, and the other issue is our water is being taken away. When you go to Mpumalanga, you go next to a power station, those people won't have access to electricity, and those people's water would be cut regularly because the water is being diverted to the coal-fired power station. That, sir, is not patriotic, firstly. Secondly, you must seriously stop with this whole gasification of the electricity grid. Firstly, because there's no clarity given in the IRP as to where the gas is going to be sourced from, whether it's going to be sourced from the fracking in the Karoo, whether it's going to be offshore gas that they're now planning on KZN and so forth. And the external externalities of that has not been implemented. Like with the whole survey thing alone, we have the fact that our ocean life has been damaged. There's been lots of beachings just because of the seismic surveys. And that is a factor. You can go like that. That's true. And I'm coming from the Karoo. I know for a fact that they're planning to frack there, and they're also planning to mine the uranium there. And the gentleman from the Free Energy Foundation or something like that, you have omitted, sir, and omission is equal to lying, that nuclear just gets it. The uranium has to be mined, sir. You've forgotten that. The uranium has to be mined, just like the coal has to be mined for coal, and the copper has to be mined for renewables, like for solar. The uranium also has to be mined, and the entire nuclear fuel cycle has climate change impact. It has to be mined, it has to be dug up, that has a climate impact. Where there's going to be open cast mining or pit mining, that will also have an impact. And the area in which they want to mine this uranium is in the Karoo, where I come from, where there's no water or limited water. We only have groundwater, and then we are now opting for water-intensive industries such as fracking and uranium mining, which is going to feed the nuclear power plant. So could you please not, I didn't do that during your presentation, please respect me. Thank you. Secondly, when it comes...
What's happening now?
No, that's what I was just doing, like I am crazy. I did not do that during your presentation. Okay. This is the acceptable sign for phoning, not this, sir. We can do that later. I didn't interject into your presentation, so please be respectful. Thank you.
where was I? Now I'm being razzled by someone who's from a different generation, which brings me to my other point. All of these pro-nuclear people are of a more mature generation, which means they will not be suffering the impact that in case of a new bolt being loosened and going to affect the reactors is going to be there. And secondly, when they've opted for this nuclear, they are going to heritage sites like such as Statesman. And we do not have the intellectual or whatever capacity to actually properly run these things. And these things are going to be outsourced. And my biggest concern is this is an integrated resource plan, meaning it has to take into account all resources. And what resource has been ignored? Human resources. We have high unemployment levels in this country. We have highly unskilled levels in this country. But within the job creation sector, within the renewable energies, there's more employment potential with regards to coal-fired power stations or nuclear power stations. And in terms of the contingency of electricity supply, there's another technology that the IRP has decided to cease after next year, which is concentrated solar power, which can also be used within the essence of just transition, whereby the people working within the boilers of the coal-fired power stations can work within the boilers of the concentrated solar power, and that would create an easier flow of just transition. And in terms of just being completely a just society, we cannot allow the people next to the resources to be impacted but not benefit from them. When you go to Mpumalanga, those people are suffering. Go to Emalahleni. I would like to see people from Eskom actually living there and telling me that coal is completely good. I would like them to live next to where the mines are, next to where the power stations are, and see whether those people are in energy poverty or not. Those people, I work within those, I go to these communities because I fight for climate justice, and those people are the most adversely affected by climate impacts due to these industries that are based on pollution. We have alternatives. We are saying, yes, South Africa is a developing country, so meaning we have the opportunity to learn from the developed nations. The developed nations are now decommissioning their nuclear, and they are investing in renewables. We can make an example of Germany. We can also make an example of how the installations of these nuclear power stations are being implemented. By the time the nuclear power station is finished being built, that technology has already been outdated. So we need to have an ability or a capacity to actually have an adjustable energy grid. And we have to. I'm not saying we should just get rid of coal or get rid of nuclear, but we have to make sure that we are as just as possible, as environmentally friendly as possible, and we eradicate the problems that we have right now, because our people are suffering. We don't see people in Sandton having a coal power station next to them, but they're the ones who want to opt for all of these things that are going to impact the people next to them. People are going to say, like, no, we want new coal because we want to sell it off to Namibia or Botswana or whatever. And those people are buying the electricity for far cheaper than we, the producers, the country that produces the energy, is paying for it. So that's, I don't know how you can sell to someone it for cheaper, but you, when you self-buy it, you buy it for more expensive. So first of all, we need to check if these regulations and how these are affecting the people on the ground. Because this is a government for the people, but currently it's a government run for profit. And remember, all of these politicians in here, you are so pro-profit. Profit is not going to win your votes next year. It's the people. So you must start focusing on the people, because the money is not going to draw X's. So the people are going to vote. So once you start focusing on the people, you'll get more support. That's why there's lots of political interference within the operations of all of these energy systems. And when it comes to these renewable energy IPPs, they are also not completely what we want, because we want to empower our communities. We want an energy system that will actually help us alleviate not only energy poverty, but poverty as a whole. We cannot build power stations that are only going to affect the educated, and the uneducated are left behind. We have to make sure that everybody is included, nobody is left behind, and the best possible option for both the communities and the people and the environment as a whole is taken into account. We cannot, and I will not allow the fact that people who are not going to be truly affected by the choices that they're making have a say and an input on what's going to happen in the future. Me as a young person, I don't want to have a risk of a nuclear disaster just because an older generation has given the go-ahead. We have to think of the children that's going to come. People have been talking about, no, when it comes to Fukushima, there was only minor mutations in the ocean because of the leak. Those mutations are genetic, which means it's inheritory, meaning the entire ecosystem is going to be changed because of that. And I cannot allow the fact that my kids won't be able to see a fish the way it used to look, instead of a fish with two mouths or whatever the mutation is going to be. So we have to be clear about this. We're talking about the future. We're talking about the sustainability of the planet. And in case you, when you say, like, no, climate change is a myth, if coal is the answer, I'm not too sure how you can give an answer if climate change is a myth. Our limited resource is like that. So please, we need to make this integrated resource plan include human resources, meaning you have to include the health and well-being of the people that's being guaranteed by our constitution. We have to make sure our environment is being guaranteed to be healthy and sustainable. If we cannot do that, this integrated resource plan has failed the people, and the people will not vote because you want the money to vote because you're pro-money. You are pro-big industries and not pro-people. You have to make sure that you get the people from the ground up. You can't just have technicians over there and then you have uneducated masses not being able to fend for themselves economically. And if you're going to opt for all of these highly technical jobs, how many people have the capacity to fill that right now? Because it means that you'll have to also invest in education to get those people there. And are these people investing in education right now? They are not. They're busy trying to fill their pockets and trying to loot as much as they can whilst opting for whatever is going to suit their pockets best in the future instead of what's going to suit the people best in the future. Please, I beg of you, be pro-people and not pro-profit. Because profit is not going to vote. It's the people that's going to vote. I thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much. I'm not going to time you, so, but I'm going to adjourn the meeting at 1:00. So we'll take the next gentleman. Mr. Court, I'm going to sacrifice some of the things we're supposed to do in future. You know, because we're talking about a round table earlier on to finalize the IRP. We know the people we meet in that round table. But I want us to have a round table of young people. So that a round table of young people, so that we don't have a discussion that you old people see, because you're too old, you're not thinking about us and the future. I want young people in a discussion. The other day we had young nuclear professionals. Yeah, they say one nuclear. So we want young people in the same discussion so that they can discuss their future. So I think we should have a round table that just has young people in a meeting to express different views. Unest?
Thank you, Thomasin. My name is Meli Kayaplani. I'm from the Eastern Cape in PE. First of all, I would like to commend the minister for the approval of 56 billion in 2027 renewable energy independent power producers. But unfortunately, Chairperson, we expected that the renewable energy project will be community driven. You see, because now it's sort of being privatized. Because I don't know if you can make any. Okay. It will make any difference to the communities because the tariff will be determined by ESCOM. So I don't want to pay too much on Shepherdson simply because of we don't have enough time. I'd like to allow my other colleagues to have a say on this. Okay, thank you very much, Chef.
Thanks. So, yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. Ek gaan nou Afrikaans praat. Dit is genoeg dat ons gestop was as Khoikhoi mense, eerste nasie van Suid-Afrika, om ons Khoikhoi Gubap, ons eerste taal, baarmoedertaal te praat. So ek praat Afrikaans, wat nie van die inkomers daar gestel is nie, maar wat genoeg woorde bevat van Khoikhoi mense, wat die kriks net weggegooi is om ander mense te akkommodeer wat ons kom roppen van ons land, van ons bronne en ons menswaardigheid oorboord wil kom gooi. Ek dank u, voorzitter, jammer dat ek so begin, maar dit is precies hoe ons nog voel, want ons word nog as die eerstelinge van hierdie land geïgnoreer op groot skaal. Nietemin, ek dank onze minister Gadede dat hierdie iets not. Ja, dit is nie een plan wat al aanvaar is nie, maar dat hierdie geïntegreerde energieplan op tafel is. Dit is net baie jammer dat ek die teleurstelling moet uitspreek namens ons Oos-Kaapse gemeenskap. Ek is in elk geval een van die leiders in die breer kandeboe area in die Ooskaap en vooral uit toespunt omgeving waar kernkrachtstasie in die toekomst gebouw wil word door ons regering of door ander mense wat ons regering beïnvloed om so een plan daar te hee. As een Joodse vroumoeder van een volk is dit onaanvaardbaar. Ons sê nie vir kernkracht. En die rede waarom? Die rede is eenvoudig maar baie diepsinnig. Kernkracht, blauwerei, wat ons hier plante en omgeving tot in totaliteit gaan uitwis en selfs ons mense wat naby woon in daar die area waar daar die krachtstasies sal wees. Hulle gezondheid gaan daar nie heen, ons seelewe gaan daar nie heen en luister baie mooi na een koi-koi moeder. Ons is die mense wat eerst vir die beskerming van moeder aarde gegaan het. Mother Earth is not just a resource center to do as we please. No, that's all indigenous laws and orders according to the seven laws of law of governance of Mother Earth and our peoples as a whole, especially Africa, as the first continent in the womb of Mother Earth. And therefore we say no, no, also to Skaligas. Skaligas, in Graafrenet, in die aar, die meest broodste karoe gebied, waar waterskaarste erg is. Ons kan dit nie toelaten, om te boor, so diep te boor in moeder aarde. Dis amper soos to right perversion. That's how we perceive it and understand it. We should rather opt our government for renewable energy than more coal and the kernkracht, wat nou die goedkoopste kracht volgens vorige inzette is. Maar ons weet, dat kan goedkoop wees in geld. In die dollar of in die rand kan het goedkoper klink. Maar as die der aarde uit mekaar het geskiet is, binnen in haar baarmoeder, daar is geen manier hoe sy weer herstel kan word en genees kan word nie. Ek wil een voorbeeld noem, voorzitter. Een klompe jare gelede is daar in Aberdeen explorations, sorry dat ek Afrikaans en Engels wil praat, explorations toegepas. Plus minus 30, 40 jaar terug. Tot vandag toe nog is daar geen tegel aangewend om die diepe skade wat gedoen is because of that exploration in Aberdeen. It has gone as far as Klipplaat, as far as what's that other place name? Jonathanville, where that skade is onherstelbaar. Een van die persone wat explore het verskillig van daar die tyd aan, kan daar die skade weer herstel nie. Wat gaan van ons generaties word, wat kom? Daar is ek draag kennis in ons koeikoei gemeenskap van mense wat methodes het en ek en I call it indigenous exploration. To have respect for Mother Earth and her resources and Mother Nature around us for our people and for the generations to come. We need to protect and to embrace our people, Mother Earth, for future generations. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Ke rata go leboa la setulo ke tlo bua ka leleme la Jesu la Sesotho. And then ke ntse ke kopanya mane le mane ka Sekgowa. Lebitso la ka ke Lehlohonolo Kalamore. Ke tswa motseng wa Vaal. Ke tswa mokgatlhong o bitswang GMOF. Ke le mokgatlho wa tumelo.
O tswa motseng wa Vale? Ga ona motse o bitswang Vale. O tswa ka?
Ke tswa plekeng e bitswang Everton West.
Wa bua
jwa. Thank you ntate. Ke a lebo. Ke a lebo ka tshwelo. Lebitso mokgatlho o ne kwa tumelo. Re kopanela mo le Atlas Africa mane Gauteng. Re ka tlasa lekala le bitswang CJEC. CJEC ga go tsonyana fela ke tlhalosa ke mokgatlho o kopantseng, ke lekala le kopantseng mekgatlho e tswang metse le metsaneng e ka bang re sebisana mo tshebisanong ya climate change. Ya ka taba kena ke tswela pele ke sa senye nako ya ga modula setulo wa ka. Jalo ka ke se ke hlalositse, I come from Vaal area surrounded by the our area is surrounded by the companies that that pollutes our area. Our people in our area, most of them, they are experiencing complications in their health. So as a community-based organizations, we oppose to the inclusion of new coal capacity on the updated integrated resource plan. Coal has a major health impact, particularly for those who are working in the coal mines and also to those who are living in an area with lots of coal fire power stations. As I alluded first, that our people in our area, they are affected, they are experiencing disease like asthma, itching eyes, and bronchitis, which are caused by the big companies around the area, like ArcelorMittal and Sasolfen, and also Letabo Power Station. As I make an example, in the area where I live in Everton West, in Rehabilitation Center in Everton West, where my little boy of 1 year, 3 months attends the crash there. There's been many cases of children suffered from asthma and continuous flu, and some they even been hospitalized because of air pollution caused by these big companies. So as community organizations, we say no to coal. We ask our government not to include coal in this plan, because coal is very much harmful for our health as a people who live. And as community-based organization, we say put people first before you can make profit. By so saying, I thank you.
Thank you very much. Who's next?
Thank you, honorable members and honorable chair. Good day, everyone. My name is Beatrice Bavela. I'm from Limpopo in Lephalale. I'm here to represent various women's groups, such as Matuba Young Women's Group, Bopanang in Bangalong, and the Lephalale Women's Agricultural Group. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today about the IRP. The IRP proposed 46% energy from coal. This is not acceptable to the people of the Waterberg, especially women. More coal is a threat to our way of life. You are working here in the beautiful city of Cape Town, far away from the Waterberg, but you still represent the people. So please listen to our voice. Listen to the voice of your children. If you decide to put much more coal into the IRP, we will have to pay the price. In parallel, we don't have to guess, estimate, or project the possible impact of coal. With a huge coal mine and one of the biggest coal-fired power stations in the world, we know what the impacts are, and we are living with them almost every day. When some of our groups opposed the building of Midupi, they told the world what would happen, but nobody listened. We beg you to listen now. We are paying the price for decisions you make, and the price is too high and too risky. As I'm speaking right now here, we're experiencing more high number of teenage pregnancy, high number of crime, prostitute, dropouts, sexual transmitted diseases, and high rate of drug abusers. The price we are paying is too high, and we are already feeling the effect of climate change. When you make your decisions, please think of your children in Waterberg. We will pay will pay the price of your decisions while we're still paying the price with our presence, our future, and our lives. Please listen to our voice. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Dumelang, my name is Didiro Majapolo. I'm the chairperson of Tiambopan Community Forum. I'm also on behalf of Puduhood Organization and Tula Moral Organization and the concerned citizen of Lephalale, Kolimpopo. As Tiambopan Community, we say yes to life, no to more coal projects. If we allow more coal projects in Tiambopan, the people will not enjoy the fruit of freedom, equality, and solidarity. We will end up having no food security and places where the soil is dead, the water is acid, and the air is pungent with smell of sulfur, benzene, and other pollutants. We don't agree with coal projects in our community because these companies tell us about jobs that we can't even qualify for because of our health. Because of the pollution from Midupi Matimba power stations and Exarafuot Khelek mine, our health has already been impacted. The SLP social labor plans promise outsourced development of roads, houses, education, and so on, but they never deliver. My godmother says SLP is a fancy word for bribe. Even the Center of Applied Legal Studies has shown that SLP's promising a new life for those whose land are destroyed fail to deliver. Mines like Vikarabelo Coal Mine, we never saw their SLP. If they signed it with the municipality, they did without consulting the affected community, even Exaro Klothelek Mine. Local, provincial, and national government failed to formalize our area because they know they have plans about our place. Coal project does not work for people. We need more focus on renewable energy. Solar energy is more affordable and can put a light into every house. Coal projects are immensely destructive of land, water, and people. By allowing coal projects, we are selling our food security, our land, our water, and our future. People's health is already affected and at risk because of Midupi Power Station. Midupi Power Station is already operating. People die from cancer, TB, asthma, lung and heart diseases caused by polluted air. We have already suffered without water for years in Tiambopan. People do not have clean drinking water in the area. A contractor firm called Babcock tested the water and it was suitable for their workers to drink. Our people cannot afford bottled water, so we have no choice. But for mining and power station, a huge pipeline must be built. Coal projects use huge amounts of water. The community of Tiambopan will not see a drop of this water. As the people of Tiambopan, we have already received news that we will be relocated. We know that big companies will make a plan to move us, catching people with a legal compensation. We don't want this. What about our graves of our forefathers? On the farms and the place where we are staying now? Midupi was already built on top of graves of our people. It proves that they do not care for us. They only care for money or profit. We say no to coal. We do not want to sell our beautiful bushveld, the land of our forefathers, and the future of our children. From people of Tiambopan or Lephalale, we want this parliament to visit us and see what kind of life we are living. Stop issuing mining license fast as like you are issuing birth certificate. People before profit. I thank you.
Moloni, my name is Ntombizodwa Ranyadi. Nkamga is Soweto, the first location after FNB Stadium. I felt offended, you know, to hear the employee of government, you know, side talking why do you to call my civil society organization? And it's not nice, really. Because the Avanti Bekala, they were talking there and then nobody said anything. But you must see the Telen Avanti Bafana and Atavamiyama, it's so painful. Really. You know, you are sitting there and then there are people, you Avanti Bekala government, and then you know they do side talks. I don't like it. You don't comment like that. We are also human beings by a civil government because some of us do it. And if I'm not here, I cannot fly from a Joburg, neither can you. I'm not here to play. I need my voice to be heard, even if it's not going to return down. But at least I am here. I'm going to put this film for me. I'm going to when people talk in any language. I don't like it. We are a partner of a Women in Energy and Climate Change, which consists of a few women around helping. I've come from different organizations. Abanye they are farmers, abanye but my PC, abanye they belong to home based care, they handle the family sabantu because they are concerned community. But interest one sile the energy and climate change. Whatever decision is supposed to be taken here, we are part of a community. At least we are part of the community, not only the government. You know, the problem will be but down there about within our community. Yes, we had Ilona this thing IRP say that different energies of forms. But my worry being E-coal is also included. E-gas is included. I don't know, especially gas. E-coal already we've got ama mines. They are generating electricity from coal. If I forget why the E-coal with this IRP 2018, we will go to ama mines. Why at least we will let us do ama renewable energy? Because already E-coal is sitting high. Yes, we know which is internet, it will never change overnight, but let us deal with the consequences of what I am Zagala already now. When we are on the freeway, the SNB Stadium, there is RMP mine there. Ego Guti already was suffering by from June, July, August, September. Kunde dust in the evening and the Chinese in it. Sitya Ugucha Ogulumezai. They are happy because they do. Profit before people buy and buy and buy my part. Market is not going to lose. Most of our presentation, they talked about Mpumalanga. Yes, I was happy to get electricity because I stay in Soweto. But then I was good. I get electricity. I went to Mpumalanga. We went for a tour, you know, 3 times, but when I go there, it's almost as if it's a new thing every day. And I changed the mindset that I had within my family. And I changed the mindset of my family, including the kids. Over to you, don't leave a charger on the plug because of what we have. People are staying next to the mines, but they don't have access to electricity. They don't have access to what? Health hazards, it's worse. There's no clinic, you know, near them. And another comment is that they are generating in insurgency for economy in South Africa. Because they import people from outside, from Botswana, Swaziland, you know, name them Eastern Cape, they come and work in those mines. But the people who are staying next to the mines, they don't have access to work. Who's fully home? And at the end of the day, when the health hazards, we must take care of our husbands. A young lady talked about prostitution. They go from Eastern Cape or West. They left their wife back at home. And then they pay those young girls and then we can contract HIV and AIDS. And then maybe when the man is sick, he must go back home. The wife must take responsibility. We are trying to do, you know, small farmers staying at the schools where we are staying. Some person can ask me, how do you know climate change? I'm not a scientist, but I have a degree of knowledge. from what I'm learning, we are supposed to have four seasons in the year, but it seems that if it's not one, we're having at least two. We don't even know how, what to plant anymore. And so this economy already, it's so expensive, I'm a tourist as well, but alive, because the Eskom is not fair to us, to be honest. It's a pity we do a concert in Uhambil. I hope next time, Maguka Kukala, my communities, I want to budget out of my problems before other people come in. Because what they are doing, they just do the presentation and then they go. And then without hearing the community, all the time, that's what happens in the parliament with NESA people, that's what is happening, without them hearing our views here as community. So really, still with next time, that we must be given a chance, go get a in a community, basis is kind of so that when they do their presentation, they do presentation based on what? They talked about Ilona, Soweto. Yes, we are in debt. And you know, did they go to the community of Soweto and ask Guti why we are in debt now? Why are we in debt? Ikale before 1994, when we were supposed to vote for the same people who are governing for us. Before 1994, they said to stop paying our services, stop paying electricity, so that this is about to see when the loan goes. Somewhere in 1994, did they went back to the community? Now we are going to start here, and then we cancel everything. They are owning Eskom. I'm going to put on a new man. I'm owning Eskom. If I die tomorrow, I'm going to change the inch. They are not going to change the house, because they have to pay the debts. We are talking with the youth who are not working today. Yes, but I'm going to go to school. We can also say you don't go to school. They are going there. But our students, see Pilar Negranti, you haven't got a plan. If you don't have a plan, then it's bad. But if I have a Holy Grant, you haven't plan, which is 420 per month. I'm having three beautiful kids. My last one will be turning 16. I've got only 2 years left to grant your plan. My got 18 years and then it's doomed. So where do I start? They go to the community. For example, this IRP presentation, as we told them, we are presenting because we know what we are dealing with. We are helped by NGOs who are, on top. We tried to write to the department, which is called at least make 100 copies for the community so that we give to the community, sit down, bust through the letter, and then come and do presentation. No. No answer was given to us, which is not fair. But if votes must be there, people will come running with their 4x4s in our location, which is not fair. So, please take us to consideration. We are part and parcel of this country, South Africa. We need to live in Abantu. They take these Zimbabwe's builder, do them in that. Abantu, they are staying at Google Center, Google Shooting, whatever, and they are not affected by anything. Telling us, community, we are affected. I thank you, Chairperson.
I don't know what happened that offended you, but yeah, it was this.
The body is a chairman. What offended me, Chairperson?
No, don't tell me. I apologize. I heard what you said.
Okay.
You shouldn't be offended here. This is supposed to be the parliament of the people. So we have a problem now. The time is 7 minutes past one. I promised to adjourn the meeting at 1 o'clock. So honourable members, can I adjourn the meeting now? If it's not going to offend anyone. You can ask the lady who wants to speak there if she's going to be offended if I adjourn the meeting now. Young man, why are you
Why are you on your feet? What time?
3:00, 1500, 15:25. They've got my details. I've got, you know, please. What I've learned from here, we need to talk.
You can't speak from there. I didn't ask you to speak.
I'm thinking. Thank you.
Ma'am, we need to adjourn the meeting now.
Only 3 minutes.
Okay.
3,
that's a lot.
Hey, okay. And go. Mna ke sendu we slow rating send your body such payment in for your men's young as a whole. Mna ndinguma khulu orange farm, up orange farm, sit divana singabo gogo, and kodwa ke at the same time singatsho ndizi-partners kunye ne-forum ekuthiwa yi-WECCF ngeke ndisayichaza uba umlinganamseyichazisele uba into nalo forum leyo. Mna ukuza kwam apha ndiza ndinengxaki into yoba ndivile kuthethwa nge-IRP. Kule IRP iunderstand ukuthi kule plan ugovernment ufake namalahle. Amalahle ndinengxaki kakhulu ngamalahle kuba ndisitsho nje mna ndiyagulelwa indawo yalamalahle. Ndigulelwa yintombi, ndigulelwa nangumzukulwana endlini, hayi kwenye indawo. Intombi yam iqale ukuthathwa yisana at the age of 30 years. Ngoku una about 13 years ephilele yisanas endingaka ndoyilapha ndithini na. Umzukulwana yena imqale the age of 12, namhlanje una 18 years. Iyasoyisa lesanas andazi uba ndawuthetha kuyichitha lesanas. Okwangoku ndithetha nje endlini yam kuphilwa nge-allergics andazi uba for how long uba a day by day i-allergics iyasetyenziswa. Ichiza lakhona andilazi. Le nto ngatsho ndithi ndiyamcela ugovernment wethu inga angasizamela ichiza lesinus kuba kuyatsho ukuthi kurongo ngayo engatsho ukuthi ngabo bodwa kodwa ndiqinisekile ke nabanye nabanye bayahluphwa yile nto lesinus. So ndingavuya and ngoku ndingumakhulu sendikhulile ndinexhala ingathi ndizawuthi ndihambe emhlabeni ndishiya ingqinirha endlini. Ndizama ukucela noba ngubani na kule ndlu ongaba uyakhona andinikeze uncedo. Enkosi.
That was the last
thing.
No, clearly asked.
2 minutes.
Okay. Ma'am, we can speak. 2 minutes. I'm being told to close the meeting.
Please.
Oh.
Yeah, we can speak?
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to go to the hospital. Greetings to all. My name is Joyce Malebu. I'm coming from a well-known township, which is Gugulethu, one of the oldest black townships in Cape Town. I'm coming from an organization called Gugulethu Backyarders, which is under the umbrella of AIDC, Alternative Independent Development Center. Most of the organizations are coming together and discuss their problems in our community. That affects us as people. I'm also a health committee member of Gugulethu. As a community member of Gugulethu, we are being faced with a huge problem where electricity is concerned. When buying electricity for 20 rand, you'll get 3 to 4 units. What can a person do with that unit? It won't even last for 2 hours. From that 4 units, you are only able to use it for light and to keep your fridge on. But for cooking, it will only cook 1 pot. When it's finished, there is no other option but to cook with a paraffin heater and a flame. As servants of the people, I would like you to revisit the IRP if it's going to help the community. Because at this present moment, people are suffering from using paraffin, heaters and flames to cook their food, which is a very unhealthy thing to do. We are very concerned for the health of others, especially in these hot days. Can you please find closure in this situation we find ourselves in? Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. I know that time is running out. I just want to submissions. My name is Yvonne Sampier. I'm from Pumalanga in office. I'm working for an organization called Greater Poland Office Women Forum. It's a women-led forum. I just have two submissions to make today. The first one is, we know that the RFP is failing us women in participation in the energy development and energy development sector. And this is also a plea that we have from the women in Pola in Mpumalanga. We ask for the women, especially here in Parliament, to come and do a visit in our community so that we can engage with them face to face, because we've got a lot of issues on the ground regarding the RFP and regarding the mining companies that is surrounded by us in Mpumalanga. I come from a very small community in Pola that is surrounded by huge giants of mining companies and power stations, whether it's not benefiting us as women. When energy is a women's issue, and it's very painful and hurtful to see our sisters are still traveling long distance to go and collect firewood to cook for their children and for their husbands. The women from Mpumalanga sent me to represent them all, and this is a plea again. We ask the parliament to come and visit office so that they can see how our women and children are suffering. I thank you.
Thank you very much. The honourable members have heard it. Office on and the parliament. Okay, can we close now? For those of you who are still around, we'll see you on Friday morning. DG, what do you want to say?
Chair, I want to officially apologize for Friday. We have an investment conference called by the president starting tomorrow, and the co-chair of the economic cluster have been invited to attend, but the technical team led by DDG Mbele will be present. I would like my apology to be noted, and also thank the chair and the honorable members for having invited us to listen to your public hearings, and thank members of the community and organizations that have also expressed themselves on a very important assignment that we are doing as a department.
Okay, DG. Yeah, the minister also did say that he would have liked to come to listen. I wish he was present here yesterday and today, but he couldn't. So he did receive his apology. So he will listen to you next time. So I think at this stage we should adjourn the meeting. And thanks on our members of the community. Thank you very much. The organizations that are here, the Department of Energy.